Motion was made by Kirk, seconded by Byron, and it passed 4-0. discussion was then allow fishing in Utah tributaries, but keep it closed to the, so not taking a walleye. It passed unanimously. The next one was to accept the remainder of the division's proposal as presented.
That's... What's that? Is this Lake Powell? That's...
Yeah, okay. And it passed the remainder of the management, or the proposal, or the division's recommendation passed. The conservation permit audit was... Motion was made by Donnie Hunter, seconded by Byron, and it was passed as presented. The next one was the Sunset Shrimp Farm, the CRC recommendations, and that passed off for variances as presented. And then, jumping out of the conservation permit audit, the motion was made by Byron, seconded by Steve, and passed unanimously. They had a motion to accept the division's proposal as presented, with an emphasis on sending a letter to the conservation groups reminding them of deadlines. There was a, they talked about the 2017 RAC board dates, and there was a motion, it passed unanimously. The next one was a wildlife board stipulation, and it, can't remember what that one was, but it passed unanimously too, so.
Good. We had another council member join us, so John, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
John Law, public at large from Riverdale.
Okay, next item in order is the regional update. Justin?
Well, welcome everyone out to the RAC this evening. It's good to see such a large crowd. I thought I'd go through a brief update on what's going on in our region, break it out by the different sections we have. So in our law enforcement section, they said they had a really busy pheasant opener, probably one of the lead citations or violations that they found on the pheasant hunt was the use of lead shot on our waterfowl management areas. So just a reminder that even though you don't need lead shot or you don't need steel shot to hunt pheasants, when you're on our waterfowl management areas, it's required that you have steel shot. You cannot possess lead shot. The law enforcement section also reports a good deer hunt, and they had several trespass violations here in the region, primarily because we're made up of so much of private land. So they were busy dealing with trespass issues. And for the month of October, they issued or wrote 434 reports, which include citations, investigations, warnings, etc. So they had a very, very busy October here in the northern part of the state. In our Great Salt Lake Ecosystem Program, they are interviewing for the assistant manager out of Farmington Bay Waterfowl Management Area. They have just finished up a new impoundment, or getting close to finishing up a new impoundment at the Ogden Bay Waterfowl Management Area on the north end of the management area just off of 12th Street. And as far as the brine shrimp harvest goes, the brine shrimpers have harvested just a little over 19 million pounds of cis to date, and so they're having a real good year. The way we evaluate that that harvest program is we look at the number of cis per liter of water, and when the count gets down to 21 cis per liter, then we close the season. Right now it's about 128 cis per liter, so the shrimp are still producing a lot of cis, even though a lot of the adult shrimp are dying at this time. And they also indicate that the swans are starting to arrive in pretty good numbers, primarily up in the Bear River portion of the lake. In our admin section, bobcat tags sales ended last week, first part of November, and our cougar harvest objective permits are on sale now. So if you're a cougar hunter and want to take advantage of one of those Cougar Harvest Objective Units, you can purchase your permit now. In our habitat section, they're finishing up a lot of habitat treatment projects, lop and scatter of juniper, and those are occurring at the on the cache unit up around Hardware Ranch, and some private land adjacent to Hardware Ranch, and then also on some Forest Service land there adjacent to Hardware Ranch. And they have several similar projects with juniper treatments out in Box Elder County. In our outreach section, they assisted with our pheasant releases on opening weekend, and they wanted me to tell everybody that the Hardware Ranch opening elk festival opening weekend for Hardware Ranch and the elk rides or the sleigh rides through the elk herd will be December 10th. And Hardware Ranch is currently updating their management plan. Hope to have that out for a public review by the middle of the summer. And just wanted to encourage everybody to go on to our Northern Utah Facebook page and click the like button so we can have a few more likes on our Facebook page.
Just a few more.
Then in our wildlife section, they're just going to be starting deer classifications. So if anybody on the rack has an interest in going out on deer classifications, either get a hold of Randy Wood or Darren DuBois. On the 5th of December, they'll be doing a deer capture on the cache to look at essentially overwinter deer survival. So we'll be calling single deer and then monitoring those deer throughout the winter. So if you want to get involved in that project, you're welcome to also get a hold of Randy or Darren. And then in conjunction with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, the Division of Wildlife Resources and Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife will be releasing about 10,000 pheasants throughout the pheasant season this year. We've already made a pretty big release on the opening weekend, but we'll continue to make releases throughout the season. And then the fall turkey hunt is underway in only a few select areas here in the region. So if you get a fall turkey permit, you can hunt. I think there's four areas here in the northern region where you can go out and hunt. And if you'd like to help with pheasant releases, and this is for the RAC members, again, contact either Randy Wood or Darren DuBois if you'd like to get involved in that. And then in our aquatic section, they just finished up the Otter Creek treatment project up in Rich County. It's about a 20-mile stretch of stream where they basically removed all the non-native fish and then reintroduced two native species, the Bonneville cutthroat and the Leatherside chub, which is the chub's a small little fish, but it provides forage for the cutthroat. And it's also one of those real sensitive species that is not found in a broad range of waters throughout the region. And they just finished up their gill netting at Willard Bay, and wiper and walleye each classes look really good this year. So they're excited about that. And right now they say that the Weber, Ogden, and Blacksmith's Fork and Logan Rivers are fishing really well. So encourage you to get out and wet a fly. And that's all I have unless there's questions.
Okay, thank you, Justin. Before we begin with the meeting agenda, I'd like to go through the standard operating procedures a little bit here first. We'll proceed as follows. We'll have a representative from the division make a presentation on the agenda item. Then we'll open it up for questions to the public, and that's a time for questions only. We'll then move back to the RAC, and the RAC will have an opportunity to ask questions of the presentation. Following that, we will move back to the public for comments. And we ask everybody that is going to make a comment to please fill out a blue comment card and submit those so that we have your information for the record. If you are representing yourself, we allow for 2 minutes.
Is that correct?
3 minutes. We haven't met for so long. And then if you are representing an organized group, then we allow for you to have 5 minutes for your comments. Following that, we will move to the RAC for comments and then motion and a vote on the item. Okay, we'll go ahead and proceed then with our agenda. The next business in order is the Elk Unit Management Plan revisions, and that's going to be presented by Justin Shannon.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this on? Can you guys hear me? So lean over into it. All right. Tonight I'm going to present the elk unit management plans for the state of Utah. And as a way of introduction, the statewide elk management plan was approved by the Wildlife Board in December of 2015. And the unit plans were revised this summer, and local advisory committees were formed for units that were either chronically over objective, a change in the population objective was being considered, or units that had high amounts of social conflict. And advisory committees, these were diverse, and they had representation from sportsmen, landowners, livestock producers, federal agencies, and other stakeholders. The unit plans, they fall under the umbrella of the statewide management plan, and under the umbrella of statewide management plan goals, which are to improve management of Utah's elk populations, conserve and improve elk habitat throughout the state, and enhance recreation opportunities for hunting and viewing elk. And the unit plans, they must stay within the sideboards of the statewide plan, and these are being presented as seven-year plans tonight. The purpose of unit plans are to define management goals, objectives, and strategies, outline unit boundaries, and address issues and concerns associated with elk and their habitats. We'll start with population objectives. The statewide population objective is the sum of the objectives contained in the unit plans. And that's different than the last statewide plan that had an objective. This is following the model that was successful with our statewide deer plan that was passed a couple years ago. And factors that influence population objectives at the unit level include depredation, winter range, social and biological components, range improvements, and range health. So moving into regional population objectives found in the unit plans that are being proposed tonight, we'll start with the northern region. We're recommending population increases on the Ogden, Morgan Southridge, East Canyon, and Chalk Creek units. And so on the Ogden, we're recommending going from 800 to 2,000. Morgan Southridge, 3,500 to 3,800. East Canyon, 1,000 to 1,800. And Chalk Creek, an increase of 800 from 2,400 to 3,200 elk. If you look at what these populations have been doing, that doesn't transition over very well, but we'll try to navigate it anyways. In the northern region, these are the Ogden unit and the Morgan Southridge unit. Ogden's there in red, Morgan Southridge is in blue, and it just kind of shows what the populations have done over the last 10 years relative to their population objectives. So as you can see, we had some pretty good increases. Can't see the slide very well. I think 2009 and again 2012, right in that time frame. And as those increases occurred, we started some strategies like antlerless elk control permits and other aggressive measures to prevent that increase from occurring, and they've leveled off and stabilized. If you look at the other two units in the northern region, the East Canyon and Morgan Southridge, again, saw these increases, tools like antlerless elk control, getting more surgical on our cow harvest and different things like that, and we've seen a response, either decreases in elk and stabilization once again. Moving on to the northeast region, this region's recommending increases on the North Slope Three Corners, Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, and the Wasatch Mountains of Iniquins units. If you look at what these populations have done, there in the blue, the North Slope Three Corners has a trending population that's headed down and managing to that objective. The Iniquin there in green, we were below for quite some time, slightly over and pretty stable. And then the red, this is where we saw a lot of elk on the Current Creek during that survey and got really aggressive with harvest and permits trying to bring that population back down to 1,200 animals. A lot of controversy on the Wasatch because of the aggressive nature of those permits. And the Southeast region, recommending an increase of 200 on the 9 Mile Range Creek unit. Again, this is a unit where we were over objective for quite some time, raised that population objective from 1,000 to 1,600. And since then, we've just been haven't seen that elk population decrease. Again, antlerless elk control and other measures. The central region, recommending two increases, one on the Wasatch Mountains West unit from 2,600 to 3,400. And again, on the Oker-Stansberry's from 900 to 1,650. Oker-Stansberry's there in red. Population's done really well, hovering around its objective. And the Wasatch Mountains West, pretty stable over the last several years, and several hundred elk over its objective. Southern region, no recommendations for increases per se, but the one thing that does stick out is on the Greater Plateau Complex area, we have the Monroe, Mount Dutton, Plateau Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes, and the Boulder Kaparowitz. And we radio collared a bunch of elk down there with GPS collars, and what we learned is they really don't appreciate our arbitrary boundaries. They didn't really respect those at all. And so we have a lot of migration in and out of these units. And so the region, what they proposed was one elk plan with those four units and give ranges. And so that way if elk come off the Monroe onto the Dutton in larger numbers, you don't have to overreact or underreact with permits. You can manage kind of to a category of elk, if you will. Moving from population to habitat management, three important components: monitoring, protection, and maintenance and improvements. I'll go through these quickly. We want to conduct range trend studies, habitat assessments. We want to make sure we know what our habitat's doing and stay on top of that. We want to minimize impacts to winter and summer range, mitigate for habitat loss, and support federal agencies in managing horse populations to improve objectives. That seemed to come up in a lot of these elk committee meetings. And then finally, improvements. Cooperate with various partners on habitat projects and improve ranges, whether it's fire on summer ranges or PJ removal or water on some of these drier units. Some highlights of the plans that kind of had some common threads in them that we saw statewide was there was a tone and there was language that essentially said that the division wants to work with private landowners, livestock producers, state and federal agencies, tribes, sportsmen, and others to foster good relationships and manage for healthy elk habitat. It was a common theme in a lot of these. Also conduct aerial surveys, model populations, and use a variety of antlerless elk harvest strategies to manage to the population objectives. With the new statewide plan that we passed last year, there's a lot more tools in the toolbox now for elk management, and a lot of these regions want to take advantage of those. Use antlerless harvest and other management strategies to minimize crop depredation. That's a big priority for us. And then monitor drought conditions and increase antlerless elk permits if needed in summer months if conditions get too bad. Going into highlights for each region, just pick a few here and there. The northern region, some of their plans highlighted on the Pilot Mountains want to continue to co-manage that elk population with Nevada and conduct GPS collar study on the cache and assess feeding strategies at the Hardware Ranch as well. And that information will set a good baseline for us. In the Northeast region, want to work with the Ute Tribe to increase harvest, especially in areas of high depredation or in units that are over objective, and continue to collect movement data on radio collared elk. Southeast region, continue to monitor CWD positive units and enhance habitat on summer range limited units. In the central region, communicate with the Goshute tribe on elk management related issues. Use private lands only tags to better distribute elk on the Wasatch. And use translocation as a management strategy to distribute elk and make progress towards the population objective on the Oker-Stansberry unit. And the release sites there would include Muskrat Canyon and Mack Canyon. In the southern region, want to manage the Monroe, Mount Dutton, Fish Lake, Thousand Lake, and Boulder Kaparowitz in one management plan like we discussed at 10,400 elk. And again, because elk regularly move between these units, manage for a population range. Want to increase communication with the stakeholders. And on the Southwest Desert unit, if three of the five goals are met that are outlined in that plan, the elk committee would reconvene to evaluate and discuss a potential population increase. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Justin. Do we have any questions from the public regarding the presentation?
Troy Justin, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. Justin, a lot of those increases are not necessarily increases, but just to bring it in coordinates with the overall objective, right, is what that is?
Yeah.
We're not actually trying to grow up. It's just you got those out there. We just want to come in compliance with what the numbers are.
It depends the unit, but in many cases, yeah.
But for the most part, that's what it is, correct?
Yeah, I would say more than half are that way.
More than
sure.
Half.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yep.
Any other questions for Justin? Okay, questions from the back.
I had a question. Justin Oliver. Question I just noticed. What units in Southern have, you said about CWD, chronic waste disease, what units have tested positive for that?
For elk, it's the San Juan unit. Yeah.
Just that one.
Just that one.
We shouldn't use the mic. Sorry.
Me or him? Can you guys hear me?
You're good.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't.
We just need Justin.
Yeah. So for deer, we have we have many units that have it, but for elk, it's just that San Juan one, to my knowledge.
Any other questions? Okay. Comments. Let's see. Is this for this one? I don't have any comments. Okay. Thanks. Go ahead, Troy.
Troy Justin, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. I have the opportunity to sit on the state White Elk Committee. I also have the opportunity to sit on a lot of these regional, local elk committees themselves. The one thing we wanted to do as the state White Elk Committee convened was put management back into the units and allow the people that are there on the unit, those that know the unit best, to tell us what needs to be done, tell us what the right number was. So as Justin talked about, we've given these guys a lot of tools and a lot of sideboards to say, hey, you tell us what the right number is instead of kind of a blanket thing throughout across the state. You know, the neat thing is we travel around to these individual committees, kind of, you know, it wasn't a fight between the ranchers and the sportsmen like it has been in the past. There was a willingness to sit down and work and say, hey, what's working, what's not working? And kind of the biggest thing that I got from that is, and Pete Yardley made the statement, he says, Troy, it's not necessarily the feed. He says, in all honesty, there's enough feed for both the elk and the cows. You know, the thing that we're upset about is you guys are asking for an increase in elk, and yet our UAUMs are still cut back. And we understand that, and we told Pete that, hey, we're willing to stand and fight with you on that, but that's something that we really can't control. We're willing to be a partner and help you try to get those AUMs back, but there needs to be a working relationship. And we also stated that if we get into a unit where we have some roadwork that is causing a huge problem to producers, that we as sportsmen would change, you know, kind of our stance in the past, like, hey, don't you dare shoot them, that, hey, let's get rid of them. If they are a problem and nuisance, let's get rid of them. That's one thing you can do without with pressure, pounding pressure, you can move them. They will move. Now, like a mule deer, you put a little pressure on those elk, they will move. So as far as sports and fish and wildlife goes, we support the division's recommendations on increasing these objectives on these units' objectives, and we hope that you will too tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer Chavez.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Chavez. We represent Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. I would just like to say that we support your increases. Thanks.
Great, thank you. Ben Louder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Louder, representing the Utah Bowman's Association. Like Troy, I sat on the Statewide Elk Committee. I also sat on the Wasatch Elk Committee, which is one of the units that is receiving an increase on the population objective tonight. happy to that we had the opportunity to participate on those committees, and would like to thank the division for that opportunity and for all the work they put into this. We support these recommendations as presented, and we're excited to see us headed the direction that we are. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Kevin Judd.
Kelvin Judd, just representing myself. I don't know where my comment fits in. It's a little off topic. It's more about managing hunters versus elk. I don't know if it's been discussed previously, but I wondered for general units. I don't have any recommendations about the limited entry ones, but has there ever been a discussion about a dedicated hunter elk program? And if so, why or why not? And then also, you guys introduced a dedicated or a limited entry hunt for deer on a general unit on the north slope of Duwinas a couple years ago. And I was wondering about a similar setup. You know, we got all the point creep and all these hunters that have either drawn a tag and won't draw a tag for a long time about the possibility of a general elk hunt, rifle hunt, limited entry permit, probably during the same time that youth rifle elk hunt is. So those two things I wondered if we could discuss or think about.
Yeah, Justin, why don't you, do you have an opportunity, could you address those maybe really quickly if you could?
Sure. So the first question was centered around, did we talk about do we have any plans for a dedicated hunter elk strategy for elk?
Yeah.
Was that the question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the short answer is yes. The statewide elk committee, that was something we talked about at length, and it's a strategy in there now for us to explore, and we have been having those conversations currently. It's the route that we're likely to go is almost have it be a multi-season hunting opportunity as opposed to a dedicated hunter opportunity. We still have details to work out, but the reason behind that is, as we've talked to our dedicated hunter folks, that they're kind of maxed out on opportunities for projects and some of that stuff, but we like the idea where you can hunt archery, muzzleloader, any weapon. That's kind of what you're getting at, correct?
Yeah.
So how that's ultimately implemented or presented to the racks is still yet to be determined, but it's something that we'd like to entertain and move forward with. So, and the second part was, how do we address point creep with, run that by me one more time, apologize, I tried to catch all that.
Just the possibility of a limited entry rifle elk hunt in mid-September. On a general unit, so increase your odds by changing the hunt dates on a general unit. So some hunters like me might like the opportunity to hunt a general unit just with more favorable dates than October, you know, post-rut. So maybe to address the possibility of that.
The short answer is no, we haven't discussed that at all. We didn't discuss it with the statewide committee and really haven't entertained that idea at all. So that's a short answer.
That would conflict with the youth elk hunt that we have currently, early.
Yeah, that's what you're asking. Essentially, if you could have limited entry hunters hunt any bull units and burn their limited entry points, but it would conflict with youth hunters during that same time frame. Yeah, we haven't had any of those conversations. In fact, this is the first time I've heard of that idea. So I really don't have a lot of comment on it. So.
Okay, thanks, Justin.
Yeah. Kurt Wood.
Yeah, I'm Kurt Wood, just representing myself. I know these meetings run a long time, so I'll be brief. I'm just an elk hunter. I love watching elk and being around elk, and I appreciate Justin and his team. We put a lot of effort into management, range, and stuff like that, and I would recommend for me the board accept their proposal to grow elk. I like that idea, so thanks.
Thank you. Mike Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the opportunity as well with some of the other gentlemen here to sit on the statewide elk committee, and I appreciate the division and Justin and all their time and effort that they put into coming up, I think, with a great plan as well as everybody else on the committee. Tonight I'm here representing myself and several other landowners in the Morgan South Rich unit. There is a small increase in that unit. It's not anywhere close to what the highs have been for that unit, but we do support that and appreciate the division in listening to our concerns and accepting a small increase in that unit. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Selman.
My name's Brett Selman, and I remember sitting in those chairs. So I envy you guys, not really. I came late, but I leave early. They asked me to sit on a small subcommittee talking about the Ogden elk herd, and I wanted to speak in support of the changes that they made. We went from 800 elk for objective to 2,000, I believe, is what we decided on. And I'd like to, as a landowner, I'd like to speak in support of that. And I'd like to, I don't know about the elk statewide, but I do know on this Ogden herd, when they are harassed in these later seasons, that's what ends up putting them down in the haystacks. They'll be wintering fine, but I'd like to make it on record that as a landowner, I'd like to see those elk seasons end about Thanksgiving time, so those elk, when they're wintering, aren't harassed by snowmobiles and pushed down into haystacks where they end up causing problems. And if they need to kill elk, do it there when they are causing problems. Just a suggestion.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Okay.
Steve Sorensen, representing myself. One thing that I haven't heard anybody say is sportsmen are dumping millions of dollars a year into habitat in the state of Utah. Elk Foundation, Mule Deer Foundation, SFW. Nobody's really touched on that, and I think these increases are great to support the habitat work we're doing, and it's ongoing, and it's just getting started, in my opinion. So I just wanted to point that out. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, if not, then we'll go ahead and move to the rack for comment. Any comments? And or motion? Okay, John?
No.
I know that there's a lot of anticipation that agriculture would be opposed to this plan. And there are definitely conflicts when you get too many elk in an area, especially in the winter. We have tons and tons and tons of summer range, but especially in Summit County, the winter range is getting in flooded with starter castles, and winter range is hurting. I don't have a problem with increasing the number of animals on the objective, but I think if we're going to set an objective, we ought to go to the effort of making sure that we try to get the herd to that objective, and we can do that by various tools. I agree with Mr. Selman about hunting them too long in the fall, because it does push them into sanctuary areas, which are usually where the livestock and the haystacks are. And, then we have to do what we have to do. But I think it's a good plan. I think it's well thought out. I think a lot of the carrying capacities are guesses. And obviously, if you're 2,000 head of elk over objective, it's hard to say that the objective is the carrying capacity, because it's carrying 2,000 more than that right now. So I don't know how you justify that, but there still needs to be tools for agriculture to be able to protect their livelihood, because they're the only people who are really providing open space for these animals to roam on. And in Summit County, boy, the pressure is on to develop every square inch of every buildable piece of ground there is. and wildlife are suffering, especially in the winter. So those are my comments. I hope that this will work. I'm pretty sure that it will, as long as we pay attention and are flexible to deal with problems when they arrive.
Any other comments, Murat? If not, the chair will entertain a motion. John.
I make a motion that we accept the elk management plan as is.
And second by Craig. Okay, so the motion on the table is to accept the elk management plan revisions as presented. Discussion? If not, we'll proceed to a vote. All in favor of accepting the elk management plan revisions as presented, raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. Motion passes. Okay, next item on the agenda is the Bucks, Bulls, and Once in a Lifetime 2017 season dates application timeline. Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls once-in-a-lifetime season dates and boundary changes for 2017. So to begin, we'll start with general season deer. Similar to what we do every year, we just simply moved all the hunt dates up one day early to have a Saturday opener and avoid that Sunday opener. So again, 28-day hunt on the archery, 9 days on the muzzleloader, and 9 days on the any weapon season. For elk, similar thing, just all these dates are the same, just move back one day for archery spike bull, archery any bull, any weapon, and muzzleloader seasons. For the statewide Bucks Bulls once-in-a-lifetime recommendation changes, we don't have a lot. We just have one or two, I think, is all. And the first of which is to add 3 new limited entry muzzleloader deer units. And if you remember right, these are units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and they're exceeding their 3-year average objective. And so we're recommending adding the Mount Dutton, Ogden, and Plateau Fish Lake units. But with that, recommend discontinuing the Plateau Boulder Kaparowicz unit. This last year, the 3-year average dipped below 20 bucks per 100 does, which is why we're recommending to take that one off the table to stick according to the plan. In addition to that, we recommend adding 2 limited entry bull elk hunts that overlap the general season spike elk hunt in early October. This is we tried this last year on units like the Fish Lake and the Ponsagon and a few others just to get started, and haven't got all the feedback yet, but there didn't seem to be many issues with hunting those mature bulls and spikes and cows at the same time. And this was a strategy that we talked about at length in the statewide elk plan to move some of this harvest out of the rut and push it back into some later seasons. So we're recommending Central Mountains Manti and Wasatch Mountains tonight. Moving into regional recommendations, we recommend adding a mountain goat hunt on the Mount Dutton unit. Population's doing well. Also adding an archery pronghorn hunt on the Panguitch Lake Zion North unit. In addition to that, we recommend issuing a non-resident permit on the Kaparowicz West Bighorn Sheep unit. In the past, if you drew the Kaparowicz East unit, non-residents could hunt the East, West, and Kaparowicz, all those units combined. But now where this is going to have a standalone non-resident permit, if you draw the East, Kaparowicz East one, you could only hunt the East and the Escalante subunits. So minor change for non-residents. Looking at the Southeast region, recommend splitting the 9-mile Range Creek Bighorn Sheep unit into the Gray Canyon and the Jack Creek units, and the season dates would run from November 1st to the 30th. In the past, this was all one unit, and what we did is we split the season dates, first 2 weeks in November, last 2 weeks in November, and so we're going to combine the season dates again and separate these in space as opposed to time. Also, we want to alter the San Juan South Bighorn Sheep boundary to include the San Juan River. We've got some populations of bighorns that are doing really well down there. And then add an archery and muzzleloader management buck hunt on the Henry Mountains. Last year, not last year, in the spring, we presented our big game recommendations, and if you remember on the Henrys, we were at $65 per 100 does, and by all accounts, we should have and wanted to increase management buck permits there, but to have more permits on top of each other in that limited five-day rifle hunt on that unit didn't make a lot of sense. So structurally, we're trying to build some things to increase opportunity there and get that buck-to-doe ratio within the sideboards that it needs to be. And then finally, add a pronghorn archery hunt to the San Rafael Desert, 9 Mile Range Creek units, and a muzzleloader hunt to the San Rafael North unit. Northern region, recommending discontinuing the Pilot Mountain Bighorn sheep hunt this year. It's Nevada's turn. If everything goes well, we'll recommend this to be turned back on next November. And then finally, Central Region, discontinue the Stansberry Mountains Bighorn Sheep Hunt in that area. Northeast Region, there's quite a lot going on here. The first recommendation is to alter the Book Cliffs Wild Horse Bench Hunt to include the 9 Mile area with lengthy season dates from August 1st to January 31st. And the reason for this is we have bison, seems like a regular occurrence now, that are crossing the Green River and are coming onto the 9 Mile Range Creek unit, and there's not a management plan for them, and so we wanted a strategy where hunters can harvest those animals and apply that pressure to keep them on the Book Cliffs unit. In addition to that, that population's doing great. We want to add a cow bison hunt as well and change the season dates on the Book Cliff bison hunt, the hunter's choice one, to October 14th through December 1st. Also want to change the season dates on the North Slope Three Corners Elk Hunt. just move that back 1 week to October 7th to the 19th. And then finally combine the North Slope Three Corners Bear Top and West Daggett Bighorn Sheep units into one hunt. Let's see. Yuba proposal. I think it was the last rack. Was it the last rack that Yuba came through? Okay. Yuba came and took a proposal through as an informational. And in a nutshell, it's hard to put one whole PowerPoint into one slide, but at the last Wildlife Board meeting, the Utah Bowman's Association proposed a once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunting experience. I'm not doing it justice, but the take-home message was hunters would exchange a once-in-a-lifetime permit for an archery-only permit with expanded season dates. And the Wildlife Board asked us to review this proposal and provide a recommendation to the RACs. So as we reviewed the data for our once-in-a-lifetime species, we found some interesting trends and some data that we'd share with the RACs and the public. The first is some simple averages. On the far right, the average success rate on bighorn sheep hunts is about 96%, and the average days hunted is about 6.5 days. Season lengths on average for deserts is about 51 days, and for Rockies it's 33 days. And the average number of permits per hunt is 3. And what the graph is this is the number of permits that are found per hunt. And so as you can see, 84% of the permits, 84% of the hunts have 1 to 5 permits in them. So very few. And then 16% have 6 to 10 permits. So as you can see, these hunts don't have gobs and gobs of permits that are in them. Mountain goats, the story's a little different. Success rates are similar, 96. Days hunted, about half, 3.5 days of that of bighorn sheep. Season length, 50 days on average, and permits per hunt is 8. So we have quite a few more permits per hunt. But again, 38% of the hunts have 1 to 5 permits, 46% have 6 to 10, and so on. For bison, again, really high success rates, about 85% statewide. Days hunted is about 3.5. Season length's 24 days, and permits per hunt is 14. So as you can see, the bison hunters are certainly a lot more crowded than your bighorn sheep or your mountain goat hunters. And then finally for moose, again, really high success rates, 94%. Average days hunted is 4. Season length is 34 days, and permits per hunt is 6. And again, 75% of the hunts have 5 permits or less on these units. So as we looked at that data and tried to find some common ground and some compromise and ways that we could provide opportunity and not make it overly complicated, is our proposal tonight is to recommend adding a 7-day extension to the end of each once-in-a-lifetime hunt that would be archery only. And these wouldn't be valid on Antelope Island, Pilot Mountain, CWMUs, or Hunza End on January 31st. And if you have multiple once-in-a-lifetime hunts occurring on the same unit for the same species, then the seven-day extension would be applied to the last day or to the end of the last hunt. So on the Willard unit for mountain goats, for instance, you have an early and a late. That seven-day extension would go on the late end. Access to these hunt areas wouldn't be guaranteed. We have pretty late season dates on some of these. And aerial surveys may be conducted during these hunts as well. The why behind this is one of the things that archery hunters were asking for is a time in the field that they can hunt by themselves. And this would provide that for every hunter that draws a tag. The other thing it does is it doesn't change the draw odds by any means. You don't get into the different weapon splits. And finally, it can be applied to everyone. If circumstances allowed and you didn't have a great hunt, it just gives every hunter seven more days a field to try their luck with a bow. So that's our proposal tonight. Some key dates for the 2017 season that we propose every year is your application period for big game is January 26th through March 2nd. If you just want to buy a bonus or a preference point, that date is extended through March 16th, and the results will be posted by May 31st. And then finally, for some season date extensions for our general season hunts, hunters with disabilities, similar to years past where we essentially get 5 days pre or post on these hunts for hunters with disabilities. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Justin. We have any questions from the public? Questions from the rack?
I've got one. And maybe Justin can help me with this. On the late season muzzleloader, we had a discussion at a rack meeting last fall about with the lack of restriction on optics and the, I guess, the early indications that the muzzleloader hunt was a huge success. How do you, and this is just maybe more for clarification as far as herd unit numbers. You said you're going to add one to the autumn, a late muzzleloader. Is that based on last year's numbers, or are we going to count those two again before we determine permanent numbers?
Yeah, so this it's a three-year average. And it won't take into account the classification that we do this November and December, simply because our wildlife board generally meets the first week of December, and a lot of our classification isn't done yet. And so it's really that buck-to-doe ratio from 2015, 14, and 13.
I guess my question is that if we've harvested more deer than we think we did, and then we add a hunt to that unit that could be under the 18 per to 20 bucks per 100 does, is that something we need to be worried about?
Yeah, I mean, potentially the way that we're structured, though, Mike, is we'll have our classification data and our harvest data prior to setting permits. So right now we're just
that's what I was after.
Yeah, and I mean, if for some reason that buck to doe ratio this year
helps. That's what I was looking for.
Don't add gobs of permits. You know, you have to fill it because people applied for that hunt, but you don't have to go. You don't have to throw lots of permits at it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Thanks, Justin. That clarifies it for me.
Any other questions, Bryce?
I got a couple questions, Justin. First on the Stansberry sheep, they all died of disease, right?
They're struggling. I mean, that population has certainly declined, yeah.
What's the long-term forecast, or can we... Obviously, there's no more transplants out there until that, either.
Yeah, I mean... I think we're going to have to augment it to get things back at some point. I mean, that's the only way around it. The mycoplasma that they had, that strain, was really very... I mean, it was just a really nasty strain, and we lost a lot of bighorns. It's we've got to do something there, certainly. And we will. You know, we're not just going to let that one sit out. We'll do some management there.
It's frustrating because a lot of us get a lot of transplants that are going out there, so...
Yeah, and it's such a good unit. There's such a great habitat there. It's an exceptional unit, and it's just very unfortunate. I agree.
Okay. Management deer hunt on the Henrys. I've been seeing pictures on social media. I think a lot of people struggle to tell what a management deer is because the management deer that I've been seeing pictures of, I mean, one's a four-point management deer. You know, I've seen a couple of them this year, so I'm worried about more archery and more muzzleloader hunts on the Henrys being management tags. That I don't know. I mean, do you really have that many management deer? Or do you have over age class deer that nobody wants to shoot? What's the true problem, I guess?
No, the short answer is yes. We have a lot of management bucks down there. And what we manage for is 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does. And when you're at 65 bucks per 100 does, you can provide so much more opportunity. And as the Mule Deer Committee, we locked in those number of permits that we had that were the public draw ones for normal permits that you'd get that premium limited entry permit. And the decision we made is we'd manage buck to doe ratios with these management tags. And I know it sounds counterintuitive, but the higher your buck to doe ratio gets, isn't always a good thing. It's not linear. It's not more is better, because at some point when these bucks start competing with each other for resources, and they do because they're in bachelor groups, the minute you see that, the things that suffer are secondary growth characteristics like antler growth. And so we're trying to manage for trophy quality there, and keeping that buck to doe ratio where it needs to be can help with that. And I know that's counterintuitive to a lot of people, but it's the reality.
Yeah. No, I just sometimes would, you know, you see them dying of old age. The deer that are, I mean, they're really not management deer, never will be management deer, but they're not trophy quality deer. It'd be nice sometimes if, I know one time Steve here in the audience had an idea on some of the elk that we take some of the kids out and shoot these older bulls that weren't desirable. You know, it seems like that would be a perfect area to take, you know, I don't know if the division or somebody could accompany somebody different to get rid of some deer that aren't desirable and not really management deer, if that makes any sense.
It does, and we've talked with sportsmen about this very topic, and it's really tough, because how do you define and rule what an undesirable deer looks like? And because
not undesirable, but not older, I guess.
Yeah.
Older.
Yeah, there just has to be some level of criteria as to what that looks like. If we left that arbitrary, it'd be really tough. I don't know how to tackle
that.
Well,
you left the management open, and people shoot 4 points, so obviously, you know, it's tough there, too.
Yeah, correct.
Any other questions from the rack? John and then Matt.
I had a question about the additional limited entry bull elk hunt overlapping during the spike elk hunt in Central Mountains, Manti, and Wasatch. Would there be an increase in the number of tags available total overall? Or would you plan on harvesting the same number? And what kind of effect would that have on the other limited entry hunts in that area as they progress through the season, if we do that?
Can I go to that, Mike? I just can't talk to the back of your head. I'm so sorry.
I'll just come up here.
It's just too awkward for you,
yeah.
John. So really with the permits on the Manti and the Wasatch, where we're managing to that age objective, if we're exceeding that age objective and we need to increase permits, that mid-season hunt is certainly one that we could put those in. If not, I know on the Manti we're really close. We're managing for a 5.5 to 6-year-old bull. We're right there at about 6. And so based on this year's data, if that comes in below and we're middle of the pack and we don't want to increase permits, we would simply shift permits around, maybe take some out of that early hunt during the rut and put them in that mid-season one. So to answer your question, it's probably both. We'd probably add some permits on the Wasatch, or at least recommend them, and I'm not sure if we would on the Manti. We'll have to wait and see. So
you will be pulling some from the early in the rut?
Yeah.
Numbers?
Yeah, that was...
So you'll be limiting the opportunity there to draw out, and then it looks to me like it'll still be affecting the muzzleloader hunt and then the late hunt, which starts Saturday.
Yeah.
It'll affect the quality of those hunts if we do that, it looks to me like.
As we
or the opportunity to draw out.
It may. It's just shifting the pie around. It's not if you have it where you're not adding permits, it's just what does it do to the effect? And there's a lot of equation that goes into it. How many permits you put in that mid hunt in conjunction with how many people apply, you may have better draw odds, you may have worse. We're predicting we'd have better draw odds because who would want to hunt with the spike hunters and the cow hunters that are on that unit at the same time? Probably those with fewer points. And then if you wanted to hold out for that rut season when you're there by yourself with the other rifle hunters and that weapon type, my guess is guys that have hunters that have a lot of points are still going to put in for that one. But it's so hard to know how it's going to shake out with the draw permits. But if you add permits, certainly it's going to help everybody in those.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Matt Clark. On your proposal for the extended archery on the once-in-a-lifetime hunts, mm-hmm. is that supported by the group that originally brought the proposal?
By UBA?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they'll speak to it, but Ben, you want to speak to it? Off the cuff, no. This was something that we looked at and said, what do we do with the season dates we already have, the success rates, and it was a way for us to give and compromise a little bit and provide that opportunity and still attempt to meet those demands of having a time where archer hunters are only in the field during that time frame and not make it not mess with the draw odds at all. So
Just real quick, Justin, I do plan to address that in the public comment. We have an alternate proposal that we're going to be recommending, so and we'll address that as soon as we get to public comment.
Okay, one of the questions that I've been hearing is, if you put in for a once-in-a-lifetime, can you hunt with any weapon during the regular part and then switch it to an extended archery, or do you have to upfront? Well, it was presented you had to upfront decide which weapon you were going to use. Is that...
Yeah. No, this would simplify it. So you'd get a hunt with the any weapon you wanted during the season dates that are presented, and then if you're not successful, you have that 7-day window to hunt with archery. Or if you wanted to hold out and just hunt with archery, you could do it during that time frame. And so it's not turning in permits. It's not doing any of that stuff. It's just a true extension.
So it's probably not going to change your chances of drawing at your odds at all.
No.
But you just have the option of having 7 days where you can archery hunt if you don't fill your tag.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody else have any questions? Okay, then we'll go ahead and move to the public for comment. And the first one is Troy Justinson.
Troy Justinson, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. Two things. On behalf of Sports Fish and Wildlife, we'd like to support the division's recommendation with two exceptions. The first exception would be on the late Leavenworth hunt on the Boulder Plateau. I know we're in the north region, but we'd like this rack to address it. We think that the late Leavenworth is a great opportunity. It's an opportunity to think out of the box and provide, you know, another hunting opportunity for hunters out there. The reason why the division pulled it, it's right on the cusp of qualifying. They have one bad year that it's like $19 per 100 does, but it shows a steady incline. And so we'd ask this rack to vote and move the boulder back in to the late muzzleloader. The second of which deals with what Ben just talked about, Justin, with this original proposal from UBA. I had the opportunity to listen to UBA's proposal, met with the division and talked to them a little bit about their proposal, and really did feel like it didn't add anything. All it was just adding days. It didn't address point creep. It didn't really create any new opportunity. And so we took the opportunity to meet with you and come up with the proposal that you guys have there in front of you. We reached out to the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, to the Mule Deer Foundation, and asked for their support, and we got it. And basically what it is in front of you, and it's creating some new hunts. As you look through, we got two on Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep. Once again, these are archery only. They're separate hunts that you apply for. One is on the 9-mile Jack Creek. It has the season dates. The other one is the box over in the Palo Mountains. We also have two on Desert Sheep, on the Zion and the Caparo West. We have one for Bison on the Henry Mountains. And we have one for Mountain Goat, which would include all the north and south locating units. Now, the benefits of this are listed below. First off, it addresses point group for the simple fact it's a new hunt. Not only are you going to take people out of the pool to draw, but the biggest thing is you're going to get a shift. You know, those that may have been putting in for any weapon decide, hey, I know my odds are going to be better with archery, of drawing. My chances of killing are few, but I want the opportunity to hunt. And so they're going to shift. To what extent it affects it, I don't know. But it does at least have the ability to affect point creep. Next, it provides new opportunities. As you sat here tonight, we talked about the late muzzleloader hunt, how people enjoy that. I mean, guys are burning points to run that late muzzleloader hunt. It's a great thing. And we're getting hunters out in the field. We talked about a new thing with the management hunt for bucks on the Henrys with a bow and muzzleloader. It's these type of things we need to look for to, once again, provide more opportunity for sportsmen and also address point creep. Going down number three, these hunts have a high potential for low success rate. And if you shoot a bow like Bryce, they're good, you ain't going to kill nothing, I promise you. But archery, as a general, your success rate's lower. And also, too, you're more willing to settle for a lesser quality animal. I've had an opportunity guide for 25, 30 years in this state. And my passion is hunting sheep. And having hunted sheep for 20-some-odd years, and especially Rocky Mountain Big Horns, if any of you guys have been in Desolation Canyon, you can drive that corridor, or used to be able to drive that corridor, and see hundreds of sheep along there. There's a lot of 6 to 10-year-old rams are in that 150 to 160 range that a guy with any weapon types is not interested in. But there's other people with bows or whatever weapons that would be willing and happy to harvest that animal. It's a resource that we're not using. Once again, it targets animals that are often passed over by any weapon hunters. We're not seeking to take away from any weapon tags. We want additional tags. And some of you may say, well, wait, time out. You know, the division only offers what's within the plan. With our sheep numbers in the state of Utah, we have quite a few sheep. If you look at the surrounding states, we issue relatively few compared to the number of sheep we have. Justin, correct me if I'm wrong, they have a parameter between, I think they look at class 3 and 4-year-old rams, and they'll issue 30% to 40% of that number. As Justin can verify, they issue on the safe side closer to 30. And so there is some flush there. We believe there's additional opportunity there to issue some additional tags. And then these are not the most opportune time. If you go up and you look at these on the bighorn hunts, the one that's in Jack Creek, those of you guys familiar with that country, you're hunting timber sheep. They're out of the rut. This is accessible by the river, by foot or horse. It ain't going to be easy. Guy's going to have to really want to strap on to get in there. But it's going to be a great opportunity for him. The box elder newbies, you're hunting post-strut, your any weapon guys have already gone, and you're getting the opportunity to go out there and chase sheep after that. The desert, some of you know, they can say, wait a minute, I know desert sheep. You know, that's a prime rack. It's not. The Zion is a Arizona bloodline and a Nevada bloodline. They're early rutters. They rut in August and September through. You might see a little bit of rut. But most of your rams will be in back rivers now, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Once again, it's after the enemy weapons. The Caparo West, kind of the same idea, except you do have a little stronger Utah bloodline. You will see a little bit of red activity. But those two units right there got high populations of sheep. One thing we've learned in sheep, once we have high populations, you need to take advantage of it. Because it's my personal feeling is once sheep get to an exorbitant number, we lose them. I think we're experiencing that now in 9 Mile and the Rattlesnake. The bison hunt speaks for itself. There's an opportunity there. There's animals. And once again, we're not asking for an exorbitant amount. We don't set permit numbers here at this time, but we'd like a minimum two. We're not asking for a bunch. And then in the North Slope, it's an early hunt start August. It coincides with the general archery season. And then, once again, you're hunting two or three hunters throughout all those units. I just don't think it'll have a huge impact. But I think we as sportsmen appreciate the opportunity. Now, just a point of clarification. I'm not an archer. I'm a hunter. I don't have the bow. I don't have the muzzleloader. I don't have a rifle. If you had a hand grenade season, I'd be doing that too. So I think we need to take the opportunity to, you know, we can't segregate ourselves. I'm an archer. I'm against you guys, any weapon, whatever. We're hunters. We got to provide the opportunity for us to get out in the field. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Jennifer Chavez.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Chavez with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and we are supporting Yuba along with SFW on their once-in-a-lifetime archery tags that they're asking for. Thank you.
Excuse me, Jennifer. So are you supporting the original
Yes.
proposed?
Yes.
Okay.
Not the original.
This one here. Kurt Wood,
I'm just an individual as an archery hunter, and you know I hunt with other things as well, but my passion is archery hunting. But I would also love an opportunity to hunt sheep in my lifetime, and this program that was proposed by Troy, I believe. Addresses something that's really concerning to me and to a lot of sportsmen, and that is point creep and how are normal people going to be able to have an opportunity to hunt one or more once-in-a-lifetime species in their life. So as an individual, I'd like to – I know it's an uphill battle, but I would love to see this addressed, passed with this RAC and go to the Wildlife Board meeting. Thanks.
Thank you. Ben Lauder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Lauder representing the Utah Bowman's Association. Kind of like Troy said, I am a bow hunter, but I'm a hunter. I hunt with a bow. I hunt with a rifle. I hunt with a muzzleloader. And I don't know about the hand grenades, but what I'd really like is natural season, actually, as long as we're throwing nice ideas out there. Utah Bowman's Association, as you've seen, has put this proposal together in a joint proposal with the three different organizations, SFW, Mule Deer Foundation, and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. We're thankful for the partnership that we have with these organizations, and I'd like to thank them for joining us on this effort. Couple of things that I'd like to point out. As you guys know, I presented an informational back here back in September, and the intent there was to create an opportunity to hunt, to hunt once a lifetime with a bow, without affecting draw odds. Well, we took that through and we got a lot of feedback from you guys and from the other acts in the Wildlife Board and from public. And the feedback that we got was largely, let's address point creep. Let's create some new hunts and let's provide some additional opportunity. So we went back to the drawing board, and as Troy mentioned, we met and discussed, and what we came up with is the proposal that he presented here tonight. We're in support of it, obviously. And again, I just want to address some of the benefits that this proposal helps address point creep in the once-in-a-lifetime system, which has been called for years and years, and we really haven't done anything there to address that. And it provides some new and additional opportunities. As you saw tonight, there's a number of new additional opportunities being recommended by the division. We're excited for those. We support those, and we believe this falls right in line with providing new and additional opportunities as well. In addition to this proposal, I just want to mention that we're excited to see that October limited entry hunt being placed on the Wasatch and the Manti, and we support that. In my opinion, sitting on the Elk Committee, that hunt was designed specifically for the Wasatch unit, so we're excited to see that implemented there and address some of those issues that the Wasatch has that are unique to that unit. We accept the remainder of the division's recommendations as presented as well. So, also, I would just like to ask that you guys do take into consideration our joint proposal here, and that you guys do take action and take a vote on that. We would appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments?
My name's Ross Bennington. I represent myself. Actually, just a point on or wanted to propose a change with the youth, any bowl actually, just from experience in that this year, in that they get that 1 week to hunt. And as I was looking at it, there was only about 450 tags this last year. And just allowing the youth that don't harvest during that week to be able to continue to hunt the general season, I don't see that that would be that big of an impact on the harvest numbers, and gives them the whole idea of giving them the opportunity to experience and be out in the field and harvest an animal, giving them that additional opportunity to hunt and to have an opportunity to harvest. So thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Okay, comments from the RAC. Maybe Justin, it'd be helpful if you could provide a little bit of commentary on the proposal provided by Yuba.
On which comment?
Just did you get the handout, the proposed changes to?
Okay. Yeah, this is, at the end of the day, this is a social issue. I think when things are biological, we need to state they're biological. When they're social, they're social. Again, the reason that the division went with the proposal that we went with was simply because right now, when it comes to draw odds on once-in-a-lifetime hunts, everybody's on an even playing field. And so when you start mixing it up into archery and other things like that, it disrupts that. And that's a social issue. If the RAC wants to change that, move a different direction, certainly that's your prerogative on it. But it wasn't our recommendation to move forward that way. The other thing is, based on what we heard from the RACs and the initial proposal that went out with Yuba, our proposal still provided that time in the field with a bow if you were unsuccessful, and it was simple and it applied to everybody, and it just really gave those unsuccessful hunters more time to be a little bit more successful. That was our stab at it. You've certainly heard a different take on it, and good luck in your decision. I know these are tough to struggle with on these things. So those are the whys behind what we recommended, though.
What about adding the additional tags on some of these?
So Troy's right on big. Well, he's on the bighorn sheep. We do have units that you manage for. Well, on all our units, we manage for 30 to 40% of the class 3 and 4 rams that were observed from the helicopter. And on some of those units, we are probably closer to the 30%, and on others, we're pushing the 40%. The one thing we can't do is just add permits. And so on bison, mountain goat, it's not that we would just add permits. And even some of the mountain or the bighorn sheep units, there's some that certainly we have some flexibility. But on some of these other ones, you can't just add them. You have to stick to the plan. And so if you did add them, you would be
taken away,
doing it at the expense of the any weapon hunter. And is that good or bad? I don't know. It's just different than how things have been done. So.
Okay, thank you. Justin?
If you were to add those permits, what would the process be? How long would it take? What avenue would they go to do that?
So this spring, like right now, if the RAC were to set up hunts that were archery only, then this spring I would come forward with permit recommendations to populate those different hunts, and then it would be discussed and decided on how many we did for that. So, okay. Sorry, does that answer your question, Justin?
Yeah.
Okay. It wouldn't be done tonight, certainly.
Greg?
So you're saying, like in the bison hunt, to add a hunt, you can't by law add another hunt, so you'd have to take one from any weapon hunt?
It's not by law.
But
it's by public process, like we're doing tonight. There's some points that are valid. If success rates are really that low to where you'd have to adjust for that in the future, you may be able to squeeze one more permit out of it or whatever it's going to be.
But as I showed earlier, those success rates are really, really high on the any weapon. And what that would look like on archery, I don't know. I think it'd be speculation at best on what they'd be. They'd certainly be lower. Would they be a lot lower? I don't know. In some cases, they might be just the same. We'd have to look and see what the data says. But, how it works is for bison, if, say, the Henry Mountains, for instance, you're trying to get to that population objective, and so you need to harvest so many bulls and so many cows. And in that case, it wouldn't just be added. It would be added at the expense of the any weapon hunt. But again, Troy's right. We probably do have a little bit more flexibility on the bighorn sheep, and I'd have to look at those units a little closer. So,
most of the comments that I've got from the public for this meeting is really to do with point creep and the draw. Do you really think that there would be any real effect on point creep by these few changes, these few permits?
I think it would be minimal. I mean, and unless we threw 15 tags at it and you had the chance to throw three or four more permits based on those success rates, but we're talking a couple permits here and there. I don't think it would hurt, but I'm not convinced it's going to help all that much. We're talking one or two permits. So,
Bryce, first of all, I'd like to applaud Ben and his group for coming up with the idea. SFW, Mule Deer Foundation, Elk Foundation for tweaking it and making it is what it is. But, I mean, I love how they're thinking outside the box. Like Troy said, I'm not a very good archery hunter, but I would take a gun, muzzleloader, the grenade, bazooka, anything I could to go. You know, I'm just, me personally, I mean, I'm in that 15, 16-point range as far as points for desert sheep. You know, if something like this, I'd jump at the chance to do an archery because I think the odds would be better. I'd have a better chance. Obviously, it's a lot more risky situation, but, I mean, there's a chance that maybe now I could possibly draw two archery tags in my lifetime, you know, say a bighorn or a desert bighorn and maybe a goat. You know, right now I'm going to be dang lucky to get the one. So, I mean, everybody's complaining about point creep. At the end of the day, this is going to help no matter what. So, and I hope everybody considers at least giving it a chance. I mean, we're talking so few of permits and just a small pilot program that I think we seriously need to consider it and give it a chance. So,
any other comments from the rack? Chris?
Earlier this spring, we voted in opposition to a certain means of harvesting, particularly or increasing the hunts on trophy bucks. And a very parochially interested group really gave us a great deal of feedback, volume of feedback, on managing across the state for trophy bucks to give trophy buck hunters a great deal more opportunity. And the fact of the matter is our five-year plan is not oriented toward only trophy buck hunting. It's oriented toward the health of the herd. It's scientifically, data-driven, biologically driven. And ultimately, we chose a different path than that and stuck with the plan. I believe that the proposals tonight do give more opportunity, but there's a lot more that the division does besides just focus on the managing for hunter opportunity. And I believe that the proposal diverts from the plan, the scientifically, oriented, biologically driven plan. And I think that if we are consistent and we stuck with the plans that were developed with a great deal of deliberation this spring, why would we not stick with that same philosophy on this issue this fall?
You're referring to deer, right? So,
I'm referring to sticking to the plans.
Justin?
Back to Bryce's comment and also to address it, the only way that this does anything with point creep is by adding another tag. If we don't add additional tags just by swapping it over to archery only, it does nothing for point creep, so it would require to add tags. So as Kristen said, there's no way today we're going to be able to add tags tonight, but I believe what the proposal is to look to the future, that we look at doing this so that we're asking the division to approach, look at it at a biological side and make sure that there's enough resource that we can do this. To me, it appears that there will be some years where the resource is there. We don't want to, I hate to say, use the word waste the resource, but if it's there, we should take advantage of it. We see the Stansbury sheep unit, that the resource was there, and now because of this virus that we had in there, it's diminished, and they've now closed the tag. So if there's a way, I don't know, with these once-in-a-lifetimes, if it has to wait every 5 years on a plan, or is there a way to manage it, to watch what's going on, and then adjust tags per year on something like this?
I think structurally, if we wanted to have archery-only hunts on these things, we could certainly do it. I don't think there's anything in any of those once-in-a-lifetime plans that prohibits a once-in-a-lifetime archery hunt opportunity from occurring. I've got to say thanks to Troy and Ben as well. I think they've done a good job with this proposal, and that's really what this process is all about, bringing together the biological and social components of wildlife management in front of a group like this. But if you were to go that route, we would just simply build the hunt structure today and then populate it with permits in the spring, and that would be the process to take. So,
and one more comment, I apologize, but you'd be using different parameters, because when you're adding a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, you're using that 84-86% success rate, and now we're looking at the resource when we're determining whether we're going to add another bison hunt or if we're going to add another desert bighorn sheep. We're basically looking as it is. We add a tag, that animal is going to be taken from the herd. If you consider in the archery, now your success rates are different. You could look at it different and not use the same parameters, the same equations to come up with, can this unit handle having another tag added to it? And yeah, I think that's what we're asking to look at and to do, or that's what they are looking at doing. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, if I can address that from my chair, that's exactly what we'd have to do. If we had an archery hunt the first year, I have no idea what that success rate would be, and it would have to be something we looked at over time, because it may be we harvest 3 animals every 4 years, and that's a lower success rate than 96% and some of those other ones that we've had. But again, we won't know that unless we do it. So that's why it's hard for me to say to what extent this would have. Who knows? We may have these and have great success if it's just a couple hunters out there. I don't know. We'd have to look at it. So,
any other comments from the rack? Matt?
Yeah, I definitely support Chris's stance on the biology of that. I guess my comment would be that I don't think we're addressing that tonight. I think we're addressing the social situation of whether we're going to split out an archery-only hunt. Then in the spring, once they've got their population data, then we'll need to decide how to distribute those tags. So, yes, I disagree that this is a matter of adding tags without the biology. I think today we're just trying to decide if we are going to recommend splitting out a separate archery hunt, and then later on, the division will recommend the number of tags that they think are appropriate for each hunt.
Any other comments? Chris?
Matt, thank you for clarifying that. My concern is the plans. You know, as they have, there's so much work from so many stakeholders that have gone into the plans. I would just like to be clear that we are not dispensing with them for the sake of hunter opportunity without looking at health of the herd and lots of other issues which are biologically driven, which should be the number one basis for each of our plans that we have created.
I think that the groups that propose this are more interested in the health of the herd than anybody in the state. So, I mean, these guys, I mean, are going out of their way, spending millions of dollars for habitat and transplants and everything, you know, for bison, for sheep, for goats, that they're not going to do anything to jeopardize this herd. This is just giving us a little bit more opportunity, but they will not jeopardize. I mean, if it was going to jeopardize the herd, everybody that got up, they'd be the first ones to stand up and say, let's close it or, you know, shut it down. So we want to increase opportunity, address point creep, but we're still addressing the health of the herd. So,
any other comments and or a motion? John.
I think it's always available to add opportunity, but I just think of the ordinary Joe Blow that puts in for a Wasatch Elk tag every year or a Mountain Goat tag every year. And if we are going to pull from the numbers that he's been putting in for to think he might chance to draw out, then I'm opposed to this plan. If we can say, yeah, we're going to come up with another goat tag or another cow bison tag or another sheep tag, then that's fine. But in order, if we're going to pull from the existing number of tags, then we are definitely hurting and injuring those who have been putting in for, you know, once in a lifetime is sometimes once in five lifetimes. And we're creating a chance where it could be a once in six lifetimes if we pull animals away from the pool, which they are putting in to draw now. So that's my concern there.
It's coming. Bryce.
Okay.
I see your point, but I think there's room between now and this spring that Justin can look at the numbers and get maybe, you know, get a little creative and hopefully maybe come up with one or two extra tags in the meantime. Anyway, I make a motion to recommend or accept the division's recommendations as presented, with the exception of the once-in-a-lifetime and the once-in-a-lifetime to include the UBA and the SFW proposal of the once-in-a-lifetime archery hunts for bighorn sheep, desert bighorn sheep, bison, and goat.
We have a second.
I'll second.
Okay. A second first, and then we'll...
I'll second that, okay, just ma'am. With the realization that this might eat into the other tag numbers. We just won't know that at this time.
Any other discussion? Comments on the motion?
With the addition of another limited entry elk hunt that would overlap the other general seasons, I think that if they pull numbers from the original Wasatch Elk draw, for instance, I think that they're reducing the odds of those people who have been putting in for years and years and trying to draw that tag. And so I think that that would harm little Joe Blow that puts in every year in favor of someone who realizes here's a new hunt that I can put in for that overlaps the others. And if we pull numbers from the hunts we have now in order to create another hunt, I think we'll be harming those people who have put in and bought points for years in order to hopefully draw out. So I would be opposed to that part of the changes.
I guess my big question is, do we simply accept the plan that's presented by the bow hunters and sportsmen and wildlife
we don't even have numbers. There's not even a number attached to each one of those hunts as far as permits. I like the motion, except I would prefer that we go back to the biology, back to the experts, to determine whether there are enough animals to increase the number of tags, and if so, address this at a future meeting when we know what the numbers are, and not just arbitrarily say let's approve these hunts and put the pressure on the biologists to say what we do.
Is that what, in accepting this proposal, that's what we're asking to do, correct? Is we are asking the division to explore this, to make it reality, but without, it won't go happen without the, first the biology and saying there's enough resource to do it.
Right, that's my understanding, because we won't know numbers until this spring, and then we will be able to allocate the numbers to the different hunts at that point.
Yeah, but just to clarify, if we say yes to this plan, then we have to put numbers to it. There's no going back in the spring, and the reason is because people would have already have put in for the hunt, and so that what we're really doing is setting the structure. Do we want to have this? And if we do, and it gets approved, we'd have to populate it with some number of permits in the spring. So just to clarify.
So in a sense, we would be taking opportunity away from other.
To clarify on the whole opportunity thing, that I think the bighorn sheep one is probably the one where we have more flexibility on the number of permits. The bison ones, those are essentially, you have to harvest X amount of bison and issue X amount of permits in order to do that. And so if you started a new hunt, that would be a new carving out permits for that. Same thing with mountain goats. But like Troy had mentioned, where we have a window on our bighorn sheep, 30 to 40%, that's where we could look at it and say, where are we at with that? So, and again, it's just, does this rack, are we comfortable populating with those permits? So,
Bryce, sorry. Question on bison on the Henrys last year. We upped the tags on the Henrys last year, correct?
I think so. I'd have to go look. But, that's always going to fluctuate up and down depending on what we harvest and what production is and those types of things.
Yeah, so there's a chance that we could up the permits by a couple this year.
Certainly. I mean, just without doing anything, there's an equal chance that we could decrease the permits. So, that one's always ebbing and flowing. So,
any other questions or comments before we call the question? Yeah, go down. Matt, go ahead again.
Given that information, would it make sense to split these into two groups today, authorize the building of the sheep hunt right now since there's more flexibility, and authorize the division's recommendation for the other two as a trial run?
The motion on the table is to approve this as presented, but if the person that made the motion would like to amend it and he doesn't, we will vote on that. And if it fails, then we can come back and do another motion. Anybody else have a question, comment? Chris?
This is the issue of possibly amending the proposal. Justin, you said that if we accept this proposal, you must populate the table. So we're looking for numbers from you. Does that mean that populating the table, I mean, zero is data. I'm not saying populate the whole table with data like that, but sometimes you do not allow, there are no tags because of, the bucks to does ratio, say mule deer drops below 18 to 20 or whatever the objective happens to be. So if you take the data based on surveys, you are going to plug those numbers into the table, and sometimes on our other, hunts, general season, any weapon types of hunts, we may not always have the numbers. You may not always recommend the numbers. It gives the greatest opportunity because the critters aren't out there. We've dropped below objectives. So if you could comment on that, needing to populate the table doesn't always mean, you know, based on the biological numbers, that it's going to offer the opportunity that folks are always looking for.
Yeah, to clarify, if we, outside of this proposal, every recommendation that you see in the packet tonight, if those are approved, then we would have a minimum of one permit in every one of them. We would have to, because if Bryce put in for a unit and we looked at it and said, well, we don't like where it is, we'll offer no permits, then he had a $10 application fee with zero chance of drawing a permit. And as much as I don't like Bryce, I think that'd be funny, we wouldn't do that to him. And so I think if we, I think at a minimum, if we approve these, is it six hunts, Troy? The six hunts with the bison, the mountain goats, and the bighorn sheep, we'd have to have a minimum of one permit for them.
So the food language, contingent upon population numbers and surveys, that's irrelevant because it's always contingent upon that. You are going to populate this table based on the results of, you know, post-season surveys.
Yes, and what we're getting at, though, is if we take a bighorn sheep survey and we see nine more Class 3 or Class 4 rams, then that's three to four more permits that we would issue whether this proposal was on the table or not. And so really what I'm getting at is those permits that are in the once-in-a-lifetime pool now, there's no getting around it. You would have to take a portion of those and put them into the archery. And you know, even looking at the bighorn ones, if we had been closer to the 30% as opposed to the 40%, we could add that independent of this. And so it's we have a set number of permits that we can issue and should issue for to meet the sideboards of the plan. And at the end of the day, you're taking a portion of those out, putting them into archery. And that's why it's a social issue. Is it right? Is it wrong? We do it for other species, as was argued. We just haven't crossed that bridge with once in a lifetime because there's so few, and that playing field has been even. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not,
I'm just going to need some clarification on the motion one more time.
All right. So I'll call the question. So the motion on the table is to accept the Bucks and Bulls and Once in a Lifetime 2017 season dates and application timeline, with the exception of with the addition of a 2017 Once in a Lifetime archery only hunt recommendation season and date proposed, and that's the handout that you have here by Yuba and SFW. Okay, so that's the question. So all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Yes, we had a second. One, two, three, four, five. All opposed.
One, two, three, four, five.
I also oppose, so the motion fails. Okay, without objection, I think we'll take a short 5-minute break.
I don't think a motion was approved. I don't think anything was approved.
Okay, you're right. We do. Sorry. We will hold our bladders. Okay. So we did not pass that, but we need to do something with this item on the agenda, so we do need to make another motion. Matt, are you making a motion? I see you reaching for the mic.
I guess I'm still willing to motion to split these into the sheep and the other two. It sounds like there's very low risk of stealing permits from the other hunts on the sheep in particular, and that would potentially give us some data on how big of an issue this is going to be. I mean, we do this for every other species, every other hunt. You know, this is the only one that doesn't have a separate archery hunt. And so I would make a motion to accept their proposal on the sheep and the division's proposal on the other two hunts for 1 year to see how that works out.
Do we have a second? Second by Justin.
Okay, discussion on that motion. That would be four, yes, two Rockies and two Desert. Any discussion on that motion? Questions, clarifications? Okay, we'll call the question. So the motion on the table is to approve everything as presented by the division, and in addition to that, add in the 2017 once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunts for just the bighorn sheep. So there'd be two Rockies and two desert hunts.
Sorry to ask one more question.
Can you use the mic real quick?
Sorry to add on to the conversation. What does that do with the current proposal with adding the 7 days that the division already, that's in the proposal that they wanted to add to the additional?
It would be my understanding it would be it included.
Okay.
This is just an addendum.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay.
So I would entertain that you would think about changing your motion to also eliminate the other limited entry elk hunt during the spike unit.
That was proposed by the division, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you mean like if they take animals out of the regular one, the early one, to put into that limit? To create that, if they have extra numbers, would you be okay about putting them into that one?
If they would,
okay. So, John, so I guess the point of order here is that a friendly motion is being made and asked of Matt to include that change, and whether or not that'll be in the motion or not, and that's to take out that elk.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, so we're
separate motion.
Yeah, we can take that as a separate motion. So we've accepted everything as presented by the division, and then we are adding these two sheep opportunities here. There's four hunts, okay? So all in favor?
Don't you have to vote on the what he's amending first? We can't do it after the fact.
He's not amended. So
he wouldn't amend it.
Oh, that's qualification.
Okay, right. Yeah, so it would be included, John. The elk would be in this. There is an opportunity, if Matt would entertain this, would be to just vote on this amended hunts first, and then we come back and address the remainder of the division plan as presented, if you'd like to do it that way. Does that make sense for you? Okay, so we're amending the motion. You getting this? Okay. We'll work that for hours tonight. Okay. So the amended motion then is to just vote on the 2017 once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunt recommendation and season dates and include just the Rockies and the desert plans as proposed here. Okay? Does everybody understand that? We're just voting on these top two hunts here. Okay. We're not voting on the division presentation. Okay? So all...
Any motion?
Kevin? You got a question?
No.
Okay. Do we have a second for that? I guess we'll get a second from Russ. So Matt made the motion, seconded by Russ. All right? So all in favor, signify by saying aye and raise your hand. Okay, that's unanimous. Okay, motion passes. One. Okay, and opposed? One. Okay, so it's In favor, one opposed.
Motion passes.
All right. So now we need to work on the division's presentation. So, John, would you like to make a motion?
Do we need to eliminate the original proposal for an extra 7 days on every once-in-a-lifetime hunt?
No.
Or is that off the table now?
Yeah, that's...
That's off the table?
It's still in
part of the presentation.
Okay. It's also
so my motion is that we forward a positive recommendation on the division's recommendations, with the exception that we eliminate the extended once-in-a-lifetime archery hunts, because that's been replaced with the other motion, and that we also eliminate the extra limited entry elk hunt until we find where the numbers are going to come from to populate that hunt. That makes sense?
I think so. Do we have a second first, and then we'll discuss that? Bryce? No? Do we have a second? Okay, seconded by Chris. Discussion.
What extra hunt are you talking about?
There's a
7-day extension.
Limited entry bull elk hunt, which will be a new hunt. It will go on at the same time as the spike-only hunt. And my understanding was that they were going to pull numbers for that hunt out of the existing limited entry elk hunts for those units, which I'm opposed to.
Clarify it. Justin, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah. Again, this is one where we would look at the average age of the unit, and if the Manti and the Wasatch are exceeding the 3-year average age, we would increase permits. We would recommend a permit increase at the next round of racks in the spring. If they were within the correct ages, we'd probably leave it status quo. And so that's really what it boils down to. And then from there, we'd come back in the spring and have to populate the various hunts that we set up tonight with those permits. Does that help?
John, does that work? Did that answer your question or your concern?
That's what I thought they would do.
Okay. So we have a second. We need a second on that motion. Oh, Chris seconded. I'm sorry. I need a break. Okay.
You need a break.
It was a long night last night. Okay. We have a motion second. Any other discussion? Craig.
Okay. I feel like that would, if you had extra tags, I think it would be good to move those into a limited entry hunt during the spike hunt to help with the point creep. But if you don't have extra tags, I agree with John that then that's going to hurt some people who have got a lot of points that are trying to draw that hunt during the rut.
Any other questions?
I got one more comment on if you want to take away the 7 days for the bison and the goat. I mean, what is that hurting, the extra 7 days on the end for the archery? I mean, that's not – you're wanting to take away that extra 7 days on the
No.
I was just thinking that the proposal was going to replace that. But if we're going to leave the goats and the bison on there, I guess that's okay because we won't change the application pool, right?
That's what I was hoping we were going after, because we just substituted this part
for the bighorn sheep.
Yeah, because we substitute a proposal.
Yes.
There.
Is that okay?
I thought you were making the motion to about the division's limited entry elk.
Yeah, that plus the extended archery for bighorn sheep. Because we changed and made a whole new hunt, right?
We just added these sheep hunts right now. We haven't done anything else.
Right.
And now we need to go back to what the division presented.
Okay. So I'll amend my motion to say that we take the sheep hunts that they proposed off the table, the 7-day extended sheep hunts, because that's going to be a whole new hunt now, right?
Justin, do you, is that right?
I was going to address something else.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know.
Because we just created
additional
4 archery hunts for bighorn sheep.
Right.
So we need to take those extended times off of the division's plan. We can leave, as far as I'm concerned, we can leave the goat and the bison on, because those were already tabled hunts.
Okay.
And I'd like to eliminate that limited entry hunt until they can show us that they have extra numbers in order to fill that hunt.
Okay.
That's for elk.
We need to get that into a motion. So you are saying you'd approve the division's plan as presented? With the exception of removing the proposed sheep and the proposed sheep
sheep extensions,
seven-day archery extensions. Okay. Okay.
And eliminating the extra limited entry elk hunt.
Okay. Okay, we'll make it work.
Okay. You can write left-handed, you could write fast.
I can't do anything fast tonight. All right, so let's call the question then. So the motion on the table is to approve the division's plan as presented, with the exception of the 7-day archery extension for sheep and eliminating the extra limited entry elk hunt.
And how would you do that? Because if they have extra tags, you're going to put
them in. Okay, so that's the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? So 3 in favor? Opposed? 6, 7 opposed. Motion fails. Okay. Next try. Need a motion. Matt? You pass Matt the microphone. In front of John. John? There you go.
So I'll make a motion to accept the division's presentation as presented, with the exception of eliminating the 7-day sheep extension, because we replaced that with 4 hunts.
Okay. Second by John. Okay, question, discussion?
Can I have him repeat that? I didn't hear.
Okay, so I'll call the question. The motion on the table is to accept the division's proposal as presented, with the exception of eliminating the 7-day archery extension on the sheep. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so all in favor, signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Opposed? 2 opposed. Motion carries. All right. Without objection, we're going to call a quick 5-minute break, so we'll come back at 8:05.
Which one on the go?
Yeah, he's a star.
It's good.
Five-inch
race. You know why?
Yeah,
the other regions do that kind of stuff all the time. It looks like the central region does that constantly at these
fun runs.
That's what mine was.
Get started. Next item on the agenda is reference point system. Oh, yeah.
One item that was brought up in the last discussion that we didn't talk about, and that was extending the the youth elk hunt if they don't use their tag to go so they can hunt in the general hunt. And I would like to maybe have a discussion about that and maybe vote on that as a recommendation to the division.
All right, so are you going to make a motion so then we can discuss it? Okay, so let's make a motion first.
I would like to make a motion that we recommend to the Wildlife Board that on the youth elk hunts, if they don't use their tag, that they can, that tag would be good through the general hunt, elk hunt.
All right, so we have a motion by Craig and a second by Bryce. And the motion is that during the youth elk hunt, if that youth elk tag is not used, then they can use it in the general season.
Correct.
Discussion. Okay, Kevin.
Question for the biologists. What's the success rate on the youth
elk hunt? I don't know if we have a biologist here.
He thought he was done.
Yeah, he thought he was out of here.
I thought he was done.
We have a question for you.
I washed my hands.
Too bad. Come stand up here, Justin.
But I just wanted to make sure.
Okay, so we have a motion.
I washed my hands. Is that in the mic? Is that what it was?
We have a motion now on the table that for the youth elk hunt, if the tag is not filled, then that will be allowed to be used during the general season. Okay. So the question for Justin by Kevin is,
yeah, what's the success rate on the youth elk hunt, and how many youth permits do we issue a year?
See, last year I think we issued 500, if I remember it. Let me go look at my notes. I can verify that. It was 500. I think the success rates are right around 40%, give or take, if I remember right. Randall, do you know what you're at on the North Slope there for the youth bull hunt? Yeah. Is it about 40? That's kind of what I remember.
It's right around 40% is about what I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, without me going and digging,
can you repeat that for the minutes?
Yeah. It's about 40% on the youth hunt, and I can go verify that if you'd like, and let me pull up some data. So that's the success rate.
Does that answer your question, Kevin?
Well, so my question, the additional question is, what effect do you think allowing the youth to hunt again in the general season would have on the herd unit populations?
It's a hard question just to get asked off the cuff. I haven't looked at the data. I haven't pulled the data. One of the interesting things on that youth any bull hunt that we're going to clarify this year in the guidebook is youth any bull hunters can harvest a bull or a cow. And we haven't made that very clear in the past. And so if it's really about being successful on a lot of these areas, that would certainly help if that's the goal. Without having studied it in my mind, I don't have a good answer for you, and I really don't have anything off the cuff one way or the other. I know that doesn't help you much, but
okay. Any other questions or comments on the motion? Chris?
Justin, if a youth hunter can take a bull or a cow, isn't the opportunity in cow elk right now, and the hunter take is not keeping up with the supply of cow elk, and so we can absorb a lot more take of at least cow elk in the state.
Yeah, especially in those any bull units. For the most part, if we were to harvest more cows in some of those any bull units, I mean, especially when we're talking 500 permits, 300 of which wouldn't be filled, it's minimal.
Right. So here, if we do some public math, 300 youth hunters are going to have the opportunity, possibly, to take a cow elk where we've got lots of cow elk. This might benefit the herd.
Sure. If you're over objective, yeah.
If you're over objective.
Yeah, and not every one of our any bull units are, but those ones that are, it would help.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, comments on the motion?
I've got one.
Okay.
How many days do youth hunters get on their hunt?
It's 9 if I remember right, and it's at the same time as the limited entry bull elk hunters in September, so it's kind of that mid-September to, September 24th or whatever. It's kind of that peak of the rut time frame. So,
is it 9 days? Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
It was.
It is, okay, 9 days. Okay.
Any other questions, comments for the motion? Okay. Call the question. So the motion on the table is that for the youth elk hunt, if the youth do not fill that tag, then they'll have an opportunity to hunt in the general season. All in favor, signify by saying aye and raise your hand. Oh, dude, we didn't get a second.
I seconded it.
Well, Bryce did second it.
That's okay.
Okay, all in favor?
1, 2, 3.
Okay, motion carries unanimous. Okay, number 7 on the agenda is the preference point system amendments, and that's going to be...
With all the confusion of... With trying to get our motion right, there was one other thing that was missed during when we passed the motion with regards to the Boulder late season muzzleload tag that was going to be eliminated this year. I'm guessing when we accepted that motion, we agreed that they would eliminate that hunt then.
We accepted everything as proposed.
Yep. All right.
Sorry.
That was missed.
Now, without further ado, we have Lindy Varney going to talk on the preference point system amendments.
Okay, thank you. My name is Lindy Varney. I work in the Salt Lake office, and I'm the wildlife licensing specialist. You have to hold it then. Sorry. So today I'm presenting an option to change the preference point system for our general season buck deer. So in April, the Wildlife Board asked the division to review the way the preference point drawing for general season buck deer is administered. The main reason for this is... The main reason, there's a big concern out there among the hunters that if you draw a deer permit on your second through fifth choice, you get to keep your preference points. I just want to point out that this is a social issue, not a resource issue. So no matter what is approved, it's not going to affect the resource and how our biologists manage our general season buck deer units. I first want to start off by giving you the definition of what a preference point is. A preference point works best when there are sufficient number of permits to allow all applicants to be successful every few years. This creates certainty that you will draw your preferred permit every few years. To give you a little bit of background on preference points, they began in the year 2000, and at that point you earned a preference point if you were unsuccessful for any hunt choice, and you lost your points if you were successful on any hunt choice. This process was changed in 2009. You earned a point if you were unsuccessful for your first choice only, and you didn't lose your points if you drew out on your second through fifth choice. The reason for this change was to help reduce the number of remaining permits, remove potential for our computer sales system crashing, and to ensure that the over-the-counter sales days had less of an impact on our public and on our system. So I kind of want to explain to you actually how our general season preference point system is structured. So first we're going to start with the drawing order. There's four parts to it. First is our lifetime permits. Our lifetime license holders are given a lifetime are given a general season permit. So we take those numbers straight off the quota in the first part of it. Next, we evaluate all of our dedicated hunter applications, and after those, we evaluate all of our youth applications. Just a side note that we do give 20% of the quota to our youth applicants, and those youth applicants that don't draw out in this round, their applications actually go back into the remaining applications, and they get reevaluated in the fourth round. So everyone else's applications that haven't been looked at. So this graph actually shows you how our current draw is structured. So when looking at this graph, it shows you the structure. We evaluate the applications with the greatest number of preference points first. Once we have evaluated all of their hunt choices, we will then move to the next preference point range. So for example, if I have 4 points, and let's say Justin has 3 points, my hunt choices will be evaluated first before we look at Justin's hunt choices, because he's in the 3-point category. And then the system will move through the 2-point category, the 1-point, and then the applicants with 0 points. And also in our current structure, if you get to keep your preference points if you draw on your second through fifth choice. So here's how the last 5 years have played out with our applications on applicants drawing their first choice versus applicants drawing their second through fifth choice versus applicants that have been unsuccessful. As you can see, in 2012, there were around 66,000 applicants that drew on their first choice, and around 26,000 applicants that were unsuccessful, and around 7,500, or 7%, of the applicants drew on their second through fifth choice. Now, this year, in 2016, you can see that around 68,000 of the applicants drew their first choice. Around 44,000 applicants were unsuccessful, and around 10,600, or 8%, of the applicants drew out on their second through fifth choice. At the request of the Wildlife Board, the division is presenting an option to change the way the general season buck deer applications are evaluated. This process, if approved, will allow the division to evaluate everyone's first choice first, beginning with the applications with the greatest number of preference points. Then the division would evaluate everyone's second choice, and so forth. Also, if you draw a general season buck deer permit, regardless of the hunt choice, you lose your preference points. So this graph shows you what I'm talking about, kind of demonstrates what I just mentioned. So what we would do is we would start with the applicant with the greatest number of preference points first, evaluate their first choice, and then move to the next category, the greatest number of preference point range. So we'd go to 3. So the same example I just used, so if I had 4 points, Justin had 3 points, only my first choice would be evaluated, and then Justin's first choice would be evaluated, and then an applicant with 2 points would be evaluated. So once everyone's first choice has been evaluated, then the structure, the system would go back up to the applicants with the greatest number of preference points and evaluate their second choice. And it would work through everyone's first through fifth choice in that form. I'm actually going to go back to this one. So, kind of now is weird. So, what we want to do at the division with this option that we put out there, we wanted to run a mock drawing to actually see how this would play out. So we took this year's data from our applicants that applied for buck deer, general season buck deer permit, and we actually ran a drawing in this structure to see if it would make a difference, because we didn't know at that time what it would do. So this shows you the comparison. So as you can see, the green is our current drawing, so the way that we run it now, and the black is the mock drawing, the structure I just showed you. So as you can see, that first choice, the applicants was about 3,000 more people drew out for their first choice in the mock drawing. So about 3% of our applicants did, got their first choice. And then on the second choice, you can see that it went down about by 2,700 applicants. And then the third through fifth choice stayed about the same. It was very minimal change on this third through fifth choice. And then, of course, our unsuccessful stayed the same, and our ineligible stayed the same. Ineligible, what that means is they had either a limited entry deer application and they were successful, or they had a dedicated hunter application and they were successful. So they were no longer able to be part of this round. So what I wanted to do, I actually wanted to see who that 3% were. So I wanted to find out what category, what kind of, how many points that 3% had. Because it kind of piqued my interest, because I didn't know what would happen in the mock drawing. So this kind of shows you that the majority of that 3% were applicants that had 0 points. Versus in our current drawing. So in our current drawing, we had around 30,000 applicants draw out with 0 points, and in the mock drawing, we had about 33,000 applicants draw out on their first choice. And then in applicants that had 1 point, a little bit more drew out as well versus the current drawing. But applicants that had more than two points or more, it was about the same results. One thing to point out is that on remaining permits, on the current drawing versus the mock drawing, there was only a 6-permit difference. If everyone applied the same, there was only 6 permits left over more in the mock drawing compared to our current drawing. But I do want to kind of show you a scenario that could potentially happen if we do go to the mock drawing structure. We're not quite sure how hunters will apply if we started taking away their points if they applied for a second through fifth choice. So I wanted to kind of see what kind of effect it would have on the division in regards to remaining permits. And the max worst case scenario of remaining permits that the division would have if we did the mock drawing structure would only be 7,886 permits. And that's just because that's how many people drew out on their second through fifth choice. And so if applicants decided not to apply for that, of course, they would go for sale over the counter in July. One thing that the division is asking, that if the general season buck deer preference point system is changed, the division would like to request that the same approach for all of our other preference point systems are changed as well. So that would include, of course, our general season buck deer, our antlerless draw, so our elk, our cow elk, our doe pronghorn, and our doe deer, then also our crane, our grouse, and our swan drawings. So then we can stay consistent, and so our public doesn't get confused on which way we're running each of our draws. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions on the presentation from the public? Ben?
Ben Louder. Lindy, under the scenario of this proposal, if an applicant were to put in for just say one choice and not draw, and then go buy a tag over the counter, a leftover tag, would they retain their points or would they lose their points when they went and bought that leftover tag?
At this time, they retain their points.
Okay.
It's an over-the-counter permit, and all of our over-the-counter permits don't have a – we don't take away their points on those.
Is that the same? Is that true with limited entry leftover tag as well?
That's a bonus point system.
That's what I thought. Okay.
So it's completely different.
Okay. So if in the case that somebody draw or buys a limited entry tag that's left over, not that that happens very often, but occasionally they would lose their bonus points. But for general deer, they would not lose their preference.
And that's just because, like you said, it doesn't happen very often.
Sure.
In general season, we do have remaining permits, not just for general season deer, but for our antlerless elk as well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the public?
Just to clarify on the antlerless side of things and the swan and grouse permits and that, right now, if you draw an antlerless tag, you lose your points.
Correct. Any hunt choice, you lose your points on those ones. It's only general season buck deer.
Right.
That's different.
But under the antlerless permits or these other ones, is the draw order the same as it is right now with the buck deer preference point?
It is, yes.
Okay, so it would make an impact on antlerless if that draw order was changed.
Yes, it would.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Brandon Zundel.
Any other questions? Okay, questions from the rack.
Okay, do we have any comment cards related to this? Okay, Brandon Lundell.
and suddenly I'm back. Brandon Zendel, I'm representing myself, but probably a lot of sportsmen out there. I've been talking on social media as well as the Utah Wildlife Forum about this issue, and really I agree with what's being proposed here. I think it's a great idea, especially changing the draw order. I'm one of these guys that could possibly not draw a tag because somebody else's second choice is my first choice, and so that makes it a little bit passionate of a passionate subject for me. I am part of the minority, though, in this, and Lindy's been really kind and given me some data, and I looked at how many people actually put in more than one choice at all anyway, and she sent me that data, and as it turns out, 42% of the people that apply for these tags aren't even putting a second choice or third or anything. They only have one choice. Another 23% have two choices, and the other 35% are putting in a three choices or more. Now, I'm reading into the data and kind of creating out of my own head what that means, but what it tells me is that 65% of the hunting public only wants to hunt one or maybe two areas. The other 35% just want to hunt. And what I think should happen, and I've sent everybody on the rack and the wildlife board an email outlining everything, but what I think should happen is we change that draw order so that somebody's second choice isn't taking away somebody else's first choice. But once we go through those first choices and we go by those preference points, when you get to those second choices, throw the preference points away. And just everybody gets lumped into the same pool and everybody's on the same even playing field. And they're able to keep those points but not have an advantage over somebody else on drawing that second choice tag over somebody else's second choice tag. It becomes a lottery draw, if you want to call it that. But at the same time, it allows them to put in for that second choice without feeling like they're getting cheated out of their first choice, because they really want to hunt a particular zone, but they also may want to hunt. And it eliminates the idea of people saying, well, then I'm not going to put in a second choice, and eliminates the potential for that overflow come July when everybody's trying to get the unsold tags. I'm probably about out of time, so I'll just leave it at that, unless you have any questions.
Great. Thank you. We have one other comment, Troy.
Troy Justin, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. Good job, man. You did a good job there. Those of you who got your phones off, not paying attention to social media, Hillary withdrew her concession. Just your honor. Put that one in. Let's discuss the way No. On behalf of Sports and Fish and Wildlife, this is actually a very hot topic. We discussed the Center for Fulfillment Committee, and there's a lot of passionate people that some feel real strong that if you're going to hunt deer, you lose your points. Others want the opportunity. I appreciate, is it Brandon's input there, and he has a great idea with going into a pool, and that's been suggested too. But the way our committee voted on this is we voted to support the division's recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else have a comment regarding this? Okay, moving to the rack. Comments and or a motion. Russ?
Yeah. So, I thought about that. I think about it in relation to my kids. My kids haven't drawn tags in previous years. But, we might put everybody in for an archery hunt. And half the clan doesn't draw, especially the kids. But I'll put them in for a rifle hunt near home. Anyway, I guess my point is I know for myself, I'd never put in for a second choice. I wouldn't if I was going to lose my points.
Lindy, do you want to address some of Brandon's comments and concerns?
Yeah. This is kind of awkward up here.
You can come to the front.
Okay.
Because you're not presenting anything. We'll let you stand up here.
So, yeah, I have been working with Brandon. He gave me his idea last week, which I appreciate giving me a heads up, because then I can kind of see what the outcome would happen
if something like that did go through. One thing I did want to mention, that if you guys vote for something like that, it takes away the whole meaning of a preference point drawing. Like I mentioned before, the definition of a preference point is to allow you to get your preferred unit every few years and give you the certainty that you're going to get that permit. If it goes into a random drawing, you're never going to know if you're going to draw on your second through fifth choice. My data has shown me that a lot of our hunters, yeah, do apply for just one unit, but then if you look at their second unit, those people that do apply for a second unit, it's the exact same unit, but just different weapon. So they're still wanting that preferred unit, but they're willing to hunt rifle, muzzler, or archer, like they mentioned earlier. They're hunters. They want to hunt. They don't care what weapon type it is. They want that unit because it's close to home or that's where they grew up. If you go to a random drawing, it's going to definitely take away that issue, that problem, where people, they just won't know if they can draw out or not. Another thing is, you know, that throws my, you know, kind of gives us a little bit of concern. It doesn't solve the issue, the social issue that's out there. Being in the position I'm in, I do hear a lot of, I get a lot of calls from the hunters in the state of Utah explaining to me that it's not fair that someone drew their third choice over my first choice. If you go to a random drawing, all that's going to happen is, why did someone that had 0 points draw their third choice, and I have 4 points, and I can't even draw my second choice? All you're doing is just kind of moving it over. Instead of my first choice, it's now my second choice. But it's the same unit. But like I said, it is another option. This is a social issue, and you guys, you know, can discuss, see what, you know, works best for you guys and how you feel. The division is definitely open to other options. We're not set in stone on this one, you know, but to us, this one worked well.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments?
I guess clarification. I mean, his proposal would be more, the preference point system would stay intact and everybody would go through the draw, right? Everybody would go through the system with either they have 0, 1, 5 preference points. And then after all those bulk of the tags are issued in that first column, then he's saying just go to a random draw after that.
Mm-hmm, that's what he's...
So the preference point system really is still intact.
Kind of.
Well, for 80% of the draw, it's still intact because that's when you're giving away most of the tags.
Yeah.
You're just going to the random for the remaining. I mean, it was a very few number.
It is a very few number. You know, that draw out on their second through fifth choice. But hunters want to hunt. And, you know, they're still willing to put in a second choice for the same unit. But yeah, it's only preference point system for their first choice. Other than that, it's not.
Any other comments on or motions from the rack? Kevin? He's making a move.
I would make a motion that we accept the recommendations as presented by the Wildlife Resources.
Okay.
By Wendy.
We have a second. Second by John Lazar. Discussion on the motion to approve as presented. Okay, I'll call the question. All in favor of approving the division's new preference point system amendments, signify by saying aye and raise your hand. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimous. Okay. Okay, next agenda is the Northeastern Region Deer Management Plans by Randall Thacker.
Let me introduce myself real quickly. I'm Randall Thacker from the Northeast Region. I'm the Assistant Wildlife Manager in the Northeast Region. Appreciate your time here tonight. I know you may not be all that interested in all of the Northeastern Region's Deer Unit Management Plan updates, but we are required to take those around the state, and One of these units, we do share a subunit with the Northern Region on the North Slope, and so we'll talk about that unit here at the end. So we'll begin, most of you probably know, this division has a range trend habitat monitoring crew that has a rotation that goes around the state each year. They'll go to long-term habitat monitoring trend sites and take a lot of habitat measurements and monitoring there that goes on. And then the following year after that, and our region was, they came and read those monitoring trend sites just last year. And that means it's our turn this year. Then the following year, each region takes the time to evaluate the unit management plans for each unit, look at the population objectives and check those and see how that population is fitting or if there are issues at all with the population objectives or the population level on that unit. And so that's why we're here today to go through those. So I'll try to keep this quick and brief for you. As you look at this graph on the front up here, the dotted red line across the top shows the population objective for the subunit that's are here. We're going to start tonight with the 9 Mile Range Creek unit. This unit has two separate, they have a subpopulation, the subunit population objective for each one of the two. The dotted red line across the top is the population objective for the Range Creek, the 11B, which is the 9 Mile Range Creek portion, which would be in the southeast region. Those habitat trend areas were all read the same year as ours too, so they're included with this the plan update. But just to give you an estimate there, you can see on the slide how that red line shows the population trend of what's been going on with that deer population there and where that is in relation to objective. The objective of 6,000 deer basically there, and currently it's about 5,100 deer there. It's been trending up the last couple of years there. The blue dotted line across the bottom is the population objective line there to indicate where that is, 2,500 for the 11A, which is the 9 Mile Anthro subunit. And you can see that it also has been trending up, following a similar pattern, just slightly different, but pretty similar, and is at about 1,700 deer right now. When you combine these two for this unit's population objective, it's sitting at about 80% of objective right now. Just real to give you a very condensed version of the range trend conditions out there for each of these. The range trend conditions, after all the monitoring was done last year, shows that the range trend that the habitat out there is in a stable or increasing trend on this unit, that things are doing well. We have very few depredation considerations on this unit. There's very little agricultural areas on this unit. Again, to summarize the population objective right there, there are no changes recommended for this subunit. The current objective for 11A is 2,500 deer. The current estimate at about 1,700, as I showed you on the slide before, and then there's no recommended change on the objective for 11A or 11B as you look there at the bottom. So we'll move on next then to the Book Cliffs unit. This is unit 10. The Book Cliffs 2 kind of splits between us and the southern portion of the Book Cliffs, which is 10B, is in the southeast region there. The blue line across the top there shows you the objective for the north Book Cliffs. The light blue line down below shows you the population trend on this slide, and the red dotted line will show you the objective for the south Book Cliffs, with the red line showing the population estimate. The Book Cliffs is currently, look at that as a total population, it's only at 52% of objective at the current time. This is a unit that has been struggling population-wise out there for the last number of years, as you can see. A very little increase there in 2014 and kind of just pretty stable for the most overall, really, for that population right now. Definitely under the objective. The range conditions on the Book Cliffs, particularly on the north, actually show stable to increasing, with a majority of them actually increasing in habitat quality. But on the south Book Cliffs, there are some areas down there, some of the habitat monitoring sites that are a little bit of a concern in that they're kind of the cheatgrass zone, as they've gotten had some disturbance in a couple of those areas, and those sites are stable or slightly decreasing. And so the objective right there, they're also on that one. First of all, there's very few depredation considerations on that unit. The other issues that are brought up and discussed quite a bit in the unit plan talks about the potential for predation being an issue on this unit more so than on others. It does have a high predator density
on the higher than other units predator density that's there. And so, but the unit is currently in predator management, under predator management plan, and is because it's so far below objective. And so, again, you can look at the population objectives there on this slide. We're recommending no change on the objectives. There's, it really won't do a whole lot of good to change much of those, and change anything on that one is the recommendation. So, the next unit here is the South Slope. This is the South Slope of the Uinta Mountains. This unit has the two subunits, two that it's divided into as for a population objective, so to monitor that. Both subunits have an objective of 13,000 deer. The red line is the current population trend since 2009 for the South Slope Vernal Diamond Bonanza, which includes all three of those subunits together. Those deer all interact quite a bit, and so we've had those combined for years in these plants. The blue line represents the population trend of the South Slope Yellowstone, which is kind of the west half of the South Slope of the Uintas. As you can see, the South Slope Vernal Bonanza has been above objective and then dropped below a little bit and kind of teetered right there near objective. It's actually over objective a little bit right now at 13,200 deer this last winter is our postseason population estimate. The South Slope Yellowstone, as you can see, is at 9,700 and has been below the objective again here. Overall, if you combine these two, the unit as a whole is at 88% of objective. The South Slope, again, as we look at the habitat conditions that are out there, the range trend, it's generally stable with a slightly declining trend in a few of the very lowest elevation areas. These are areas that were affected by a sagebrush die-off, a drought-related die-off that occurred in 1993. And since then, they've been dominated by cheatgrass and some other annual grasses that have come into just these couple of individual sites. And so those individual sites are addressed in the plan to pursue some additional habitat treatment and improvement restoration in some of those areas where some of these impacts have occurred or small. So we have some others that are listed in the plan, too, where there have been wildfires and we had a real increase in cheatgrass and some of the annuals that are not as desirable. So those are addressed in the plan to address those couple of sites, individual places. What's interesting is this unit, as we've done the deer survival study across the state, and they are actually catching the deer. They bring them in and take a lot of measurements, check for pregnancy, all those kind of things, but they also do a body condition assessment on the deer. This unit has been, the body condition scores on the deer on the South Slope have been some of the highest in the state appear to be doing quite well, and that's particularly over on the east side is where we've been able to take those measurements. The west side actually has Ute tribal land and makes it kind of complicated to catch and recatch the deer, so we aren't recatching them on the west side, but the east side, which is where, as you'll see here in just a moment, we're recommending a slight increase on the population objective. Those deer are very healthy and apparently some of the healthier ones in the state as far as the body condition goes. So the objective currently that we have on the Unit 9A, which is the South Slope Yellowstone, the western portion, is 13,000 deer. We estimate the population to currently be at 9,700 deer on that unit, and we recommend no change on the western portion. On the eastern portion, we've got 13,000 deer was the old objective. We are currently just above that at 13,200, and so the biologists for that district, given especially the body conditions, believe we can go ahead and add an population objective increase there to let that population continue to grow maybe for another year or two before we'd have to address and make any changes there for a population level. So, our next unit is the Wasatch Mountains East. This is Unit 17 B and C. Now, the Wasatch Mountains is kind of another unit that's split between different regions. The Wasatch Mountains West is in the central region, and portion of this plan was updated just a year ago in the central region, two years ago when they went through it, when their habitat trend sites were red over there. So we aren't even going to, we're not making no changes to their portion of the unit plan. Anything tonight being recommended for at all, any changes or anything is just the portion that would be in the northeast region, which is the Wasatch Mountains East, basically. That unit does have two separate subpopulation objectives in the plan. The blue dotted line across the top there is for the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek. which is the 15,000. You can see how that population has been increasing since 2011. We had a real hard winter in that area in 2010 to 2011. We saw a nice little dip there in that population. But since then, we've had those four really nice winters in a row out there where these deer winter. And this population has been growing steadily and doing quite well. Had probably the best deer hunt out there we've seen out there this fall in at least 30 to 40 years probably out there as far as quality of deer that were taken and the numbers and things. It's doing really well on that unit right now. At the bottom of the graph right there, you can see the red dotted line is the objective for the Wasatch Mountains Aviniquin subunit. That population, again, was kind of holding steady approximately and then has slowly increased too. It's just a smaller population, but seeing similar growth there. And is currently at objective, is our current estimate on that population. And so to take that to the next step on that unit, the range conditions on this unit they're stable and increasing depending on the individual site. There's none of them that are decreasing. It's doing quite well. There's been a tremendous amount of division habitat work and even habitat acquisition, even some winter range that's been bought since this population was the population objective was set a number of years ago, and created a lot more opportunity for these animals and to winter on and to leave a lot more feed than what we've had there in the past. There are some depredation concerns on 17B. There are some areas on this unit that do get some depredation for deer and elk, but those are addressed pretty well for deer through mitigation permits, depredation permits that are given, and various mitigation plans. And so there's no significant issues really with that. This unit is, the old objective was 15,000. As you saw in the graph before, we're over that at 17,000 right now. Given the health of this herd and the additional, all the habitat work that's been done, we recommend increasing that to 20,000 for that subunit population. And then 17C, it's at objective at 3,500 currently. We recommend increasing that objective to 5,000. The North Slope here, this is the one that would include the North Slope Summit in the northern region here, so you may have some more interest here. That population, the management plan for this unit has just one population objective. They're lumped together, the North Slope Summit and the West Daggett and the Three Corners. All three of the subunits are treated as one population objective for the wintering deer population. The objective for this unit has been at 6,200 deer. This herd is currently estimated at 9,700 deer. They've been doing quite well on that unit for the last 4 years, again there for 5 years. Again, just been great weather conditions and everything else have permitted an increase in survival rates, and the deer seem to be doing quite well there. The range trend on the North Slope indicates the units are either stable or increasing in trend, or they're doing well. We're seeing some decreased utilization in some of the areas where we're having less impacts in some of the areas, and so that population is doing well. This unit, too, has minimal depredation, and what is there we can address with mitigation permits. One of the unique items on this unit management plan that came up was the urban deer, if you can call it urban, in the town of Manila. I don't know if you've ever been to Manila, but it's pretty hard to call that urban, but we do have a couple hundred deer in that vicinity that are getting to be a little bit of a nuisance, and we've had some requests to address some of those, but we've also had a lot of public there requests not to touch them. So it's something we're waiting. What the plan states is that we will, when the city council or the mayor make a decision on how they'd like to proceed, we'll cooperate with them to address some of these issues and go through follow our policies to address those kind of things. The current population objective was at 6,200. As I said, the current population level of those deer is at 9,700 right now. We're recommending increasing that basically to where we're at right now at a 10,000 population wintering objective for this unit. So, are there any questions?
Great, thank you. Questions from the public? Questions from the rack? And or lights? Comments. Do you have any comments from the public? RAC comments and or motion? Make a motion. We accept the division's recommendation as presented.
Second.
Motion by Bryce, seconded by John. Comments? Discussion on the motion? Okay. Call the question. All in favor of accepting the Northeast Region Deer Management Plans as presented, signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Thank you. All right. Next item, CWME Management Plans and Permit Numbers for 2017. That's going to be presented by Cubby Jones.
Appreciate you. All right. Why this didn't recognize it? It's not recognizing the thumb drive.
While they're figuring that out, can we take applications for a new big game coordinator?
I would love to.
Okay, but it's not leaving up.
Yeah. Okay, there it is.
Right there.
All right, thank you. Okay, thanks everybody. Is this still working?
Really close
yeah,
to
take
it?
Take it off the stand there and hold
seriously.
It.
Seriously.
If that's all right.
Okay. All right. So we'll go over the once in a lifetime CWME Buckenbull
recommendations then.
Okay, so divide this up into new applications, renewal applications, and change applications. And there are a couple different reasons for change applications. So change in voucher or permit applications have to be approved by the board. Change in season dates have to be approved by the board. And change in acreage greater than 34% on a CWME has to be approved by the board and their acts. So this year we received 9 applications for new CWMUs. One is because Black Point Missouri Flats, they dissolved and formed a new CWMU, Pavand Enzyme, and then 8 other new applications. 13 CWMUs submitted renewal applications for 2017 through 2019, and 9 CWMUs submitted change applications requiring RACA board approval for a total of 31 new applications, or 31 applications this year. So just a quick overview. Right now we have 132 CWMUs in the state, and this is based on approval of the recommendations. Of that, 2.3 million acres are enrolled, and 97% of that is private land that we're getting public access to. A quick look at the permit distribution. If approved, there'll be 3,041 permits going to private landowners, and we'll be gaining access for 503 sportsmen to those private lands for buck and bull. And just a quick reminder, there's no action on this tonight, not until the spring, but just a quick reminder that there is a lot of opportunity given to the public for the antlerless harvest on these CWMUs, where that split's quite a bit different, where 322 vouchers go out to the private landowners and over 1,200 vouchers go to the public. We'll just break this up by region.
So in the northern region, we have a few new CWMUs that we're recommending approval on. Cedar Springs for pronghorn, Mecum Ridge for deer, Royal Ivory Outfitters for deer and moose, and Snowville Flat for pronghorn. And then there are several renewal applications in the northern region, all of which were recommending approval. I'm not sure why it's doing that, but you can read it on my screen. Okay, so a couple of the changes. On Hartscrabble, we're progressively increasing the antlerless elk permits to address the population objective. Jacobs Creek's dropping out from the elk portion of the CWMU. Mountaintop, they also increased their elk at the same unit. And TL Bar Ranch added pronghorn to the CWMU. Other than that, they're all the same as they were previously. And then we did have some change applications in the northern region as well. Deseret reduced their property by a full CWMU plus some. But really, it made for a difficult boundary, and we felt like this was a good change, so we agreed with it. And then we reduced permits accordingly. Double Cologne added some acreage of trade land. They do have some public ground inside their CWMU, so they added more trade land, and we adjusted voucher distribution accordingly there. George Creek wanted to reduce their antlerless deer vouchers, and we recommend approval of that. Ingham Peak wanted to add bull moose to the CWMU, and they have the resource there to do that, so we recommended that. And Twin Peaks changed their name to North Peaks and increased elk vouchers and decreased the deer vouchers they were receiving. We recommend approval there as well. In the southeastern region, renewals. We have Minimod requesting increase of 10 deer vouchers, and Red Ranches with a renewal with same as before. Southeastern region change applications. Hiawatha added some acreage, and they qualified for an additional elk voucher. Indian Head changed their deer season to end on November to the later season. And Schofield Canyons added 2 bull vouchers, which puts them in line with what surrounding CWMUs and acreages are receiving. In southern region, this is the new CWMU that really is combining both just Black Point and Missouri Flat. So now it's 31,000 acres. And there will be deer, elk, turkey, and pronghorn. Recommend approval there. In the central region, there are a few CWMUs that went away in 2016, and they reapplied this year. Allen Ranch was inactive, and so was Deer Creek. There's an asterisk set by Deer Creek. We have had some issues with this CWMU in the past. It's there's been some dissatisfaction with the public hunters. We do recommend approval. However, we did send Deer Creek a letter stating additional performance measures they'd have to meet if they wanted to continue to participate and continue to have their COR. We really want this program to be beneficial to the public, and you know, when it's not, there's really no reason that they should be participating as a CWMU. Rock Castle is a new deer CWMU in the central region, and Bear Mountain requested the addition of 3 deer vouchers, and we recommended approval there. In the northeastern region, there's a new pronghorn CWMU, Cottonwood Ridge, which should help with depredation and be a good CWMU there. And that's all.
Great, thank you. Questions on the presentation from the public? Questions from the RAC? Chris.
Kirby, what were the public hunters concerned about at Deer Creek CWMU?
Harvest is one of the issues. Over the last 3-year COR, they were 0-6. And priority was another issue. There were several times where they were told they'd be met at the gate. They weren't met at the gate. They showed up at the gate on time, and the operator escorted elk hunters in front of them, even though they're not an elk CWMU. He had them wait at the gate while he went in with paying clients to go harvest elk. So they weren't put first. They weren't harvesting. They weren't given appropriate access or aid. We felt like that they needed to have more aid. And it almost felt like a private hunting club, which doesn't make a great CWMU.
Any other questions? Comments from the public? We don't have any comment cards. Anybody? Okay. Comments and or a motion from the rack? Justin is going to make a...
Is this the voting?
Yeah. Use the mic there, Justin.
Oh, I'm sorry. I make a motion. We accept the division's proposal with the CWMU organizations.
Okay. Do we have a second? Second from Matt. Motion, any discussion? Okay, we'll call the question. The motion on the table is to accept the CW management plans and permit numbers for 2017 as presented. All in favor, signify by saying aye and raise your hand. Any opposed? None. Motion carries unanimous. And last is the Landowner Association permit numbers for 2017.
Okay. So the 2017 Landowner Association voucher recommendations. This is the Limited Entry Landowner Associations. So not right now. There are 12. We switched this to a three-year COR a couple years ago. So there are 12 landowner associations operating right now in the state that aren't requesting any changes and have one more year on their COR, so through the 2017 season. There's one new landowner association and four landowner associations requesting changes, and one correction. So for a total of 17 landowner associations, and of that, there are 126 deer vouchers, 78 elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers going to these. Okay, so Diamond Mountain had an increase of 4 from 44 to 48, and that was because we had an increase on the public side as well. So that portion... we're recommending an increase for the next year. Oak Creek, they acquired more ground, more acreage, and so they qualify now from 6, they qualify for 7 permits. The Pavant Elk, they also added additional acreage, and they qualified for 5 previously, now they qualify for 6. Pilot Mountain, we had an increase in permits on that when we switched the age objective. And so they qualified for 1 every 3 years, and now they qualify for 2 every 3 years. And Buckcliff Pronghorn was a correction. It should have been 3, and it was 2 previously. The new LOA, the Henry Mountains, the group on the Henry Mountains have asked to participate in the program again, and they qualify for 1 deer every 3 years. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Questions on the presentation from the public? RAC? Questions? No comments from the public? Comments from the RAC? And or motion? John?
I'll make a motion that we accept the division's proposal for the Landowner Association.
Second? Second by Matt. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor of accepting the Landowner Association permit numbers for 2017 as presented, signify by saying aye and raise your hand. Okay, any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Okay, without objection, we will call the meeting to close.
Good. We want to readdress some of these issues.
Okay, well, everyone, thank you for attending, and we will be back at the Brigham City site in December. Okay, thanks. Back home. I'm missing the battery.
We don't have to share microphones up there. This is horrible. What are you talking about?